Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Magic with Zuby. My name is Zuby, in case you didn't know, which I hope by now, with it being 20 episodes, you should know who I am. Because, I mean, it is Magic with Zuby, not Magic with Ron Paul or Magic with, you know, David Blaine, which that would be awesome. Ooh, get David Blaine on the show, and, you know, we play Magic together. He's playing some magic tricks while I'm playing my Grixis Delver and just proceed to smash his face with Delver of Secrets, but then he somehow still beats me because Grixis Delver right now sucks in Modern. God. But, anyways, so today's episode is probably the longest episode I've ever recorded. It's just really long. We were not planning at all for it to be this long. And it's all about Commander. I mean, we talk about some other stuff, but it's all about probably one of the most fun formats in Magic that, you know, is out there. It's all about Commander. So much ado about EDH. And I brought on my good friend Emery, who is known around here as sort of like the EDH king, as he called it himself, the EDH god. But you shall hear and see for yourself. So before we get into it, let's get off a little bit of some announcements. Magic with Zuby is featured on legitmtg.com. I definitely urge everybody to check them out. They have a wealth of content in terms of articles and podcasts too, because I'm on there, you know, shameless little plug. I mean, well, you're listening to this, so why would you not listen to this on it? Legitmtg.com. Whoa. Mindception or podcastception. Whoa. Explosions happening in the mind of the Mary. Yeah. So anyways, so like I said, definitely check out legitmtg.com. They have, like I said, a lot of articles. The writers are awesome on there. A lot of in-depth stuff. And just seriously, just check them out. All you gotta do is just go there. Like, just go. Go now. Are you there yet? Are you there yet? No, you're not? Well, go. Okay. So, what's also really cool is they have a storefront too, where they sell singles, you know, for Magic. I mean, they even have Yu-Gi-Oh! Singles too, if you're into Yu-Gi-Oh! And it's just like, seriously, just, they have whatever cards you probably need for Standard, Modern, whatever, they probably have it. And if you don't, or if they don't, then I'm sorry. Maybe you can email them to ask when they can get it in. But what's probably my favorite thing about them, when you're buying singles from them, they don't charge shipping if it's over $2, which that is super handy to have, because I know I've been to some websites and bought singles and it was just, you know, maybe a couple dollars worth of cards, like $2-3. And then you have to pay $3 in shipping. And so it turns out to be like a $6-7 transaction. You're just like, really? What? I could have gone down, you know, the street to my shop and buy the same cards, but, you know, I wanted the ease of comfort buying online. And now you're just charging me an arm and a leg for shipping. But no, definitely check them out. And if you need some singles and you're just looking for some cheap singles too, you know, go to legitmtg.com. So Magic with Zuby is now found on legitmtg.com. You can also find Magic with Zuby on Twitter at Magic with Zuby. My personal Twitter is at Zubatron, Zubatron. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/Magic with Zuby. And you can, my website, magicwithzuby.com. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Oh, God, I'm probably missing one. Oh, yeah, you can email me any questions. I'm happy to read any questions on the air. mtgzuby@gmail.com. So if you want to send me anything, you know, I'll be happy to answer and read it on the air. So, you know, there's that. It's also need to do a shout out to my other podcast, VCR Gaming. We are, you know, couple episodes in, and we're just having a blast with it. It's my friend and I, we're both, his name's Matt, we're both named Matt, so we're the Super Matt Bros, and we just talk, you know, a lot about gaming, video gaming, old games, new games, up games, down games, left games, right games. You know, it's not really funny, but I'm trying to be funny, but it's not really working, so we're gonna try it anyway, and you'll hear it on the air and just wonder what is going on. Anyways, VCR Gaming, check them out. Twitter, Facebook, VCR Gaming, Instagram. It's on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Shout Engine, TuneIn Radio. Oh, that's right, Magic with Zuby's on all those formats as well. So yeah, both podcasts that I do, they're on, you know, Shout Engine, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Music. So there is no excuse at all to not be listening to either of these. If you, just because you don't have an iPhone, boom, go to Google Play Music, boom, find it. Oh, I don't like Google Play Music, I like Stitcher, boom, there it is. You can't see me making hand gestures right now, but I am every time I say boom. And oh god, what else? Shout Engine, boom, there it is. Oh, and yeah, so I check them out, all of them. Do it right now. So as I said before, this is an interview with my good friend Emery, and he is the god of EDH, as he proclaims. So just listen for yourself, and seriously, listen to it all. It's awesome. Hey, man.
What's going on?
Oh, not much. How about you?
Hanging out. Does it sound okay?
It sounds a little low.
Is this better?
Ooh. Yes, very.
Okay.
All right, man. How's it going, man? I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, I just got done with school, so it's been crazy. Studying for a big test to get my national registry.
Oh, yeah. What are you going to school for again?
EMT.
EMT. That's all. So what are you going to be doing with that? Just, I guess, what, driving ambulances or?
For the most part, you do EMT, then I'm going to go to fire so I can actually be a firefighter EMT.
Oh, that's right. My sister's husband does that. He had to do EMT for so many years and then went, now he's a fireman.
Right.
And, yeah, he they're down in Sarasota, so he says it's very rare that they even get a fire nowadays.
Oh yeah, that's how it was when I did my clinicals for school. We had one fire call, and it was just like nosy neighbors. They're like, yeah, this guy's garage is on fire. He was grilling in his garage because it was raining. It's on fire. Geez. It's on fire right now. He's dying in there.
Oh god.
Garage doors wide open. We pull up, ambulances, you know, sirens and stuff like that. And he just holds up a wiener. Hey, you guys want some? Like,
oh, jeez.
It was terrible. And I got excited because this is my first fire. You know, I'm like, this is going to be awesome. This is great. Pull up and it's, you know, little old man Melvin barbecuing.
Oh, so are you planning on being local when you finally get, you know, done with EMT and firemen and all that?
I'm not sure. Someone actually put it in perspective for me. I was on a clinical and he was like, you know, I didn't want to work where I grew up because I didn't want to see my friends and their families, you know, going through trouble and getting sick and all that. But at the same time, I mean, I don't like driving.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I drive to Tampa every day, and it's just, it's not fun.
Yeah. I didn't have to do that.
I mean, I'm so used to it now. I've been doing it for over 5 years, but there's just some days where I'm just, fucking kill me now, please. But, I mean, to each their own. I'm used to it, so. I get plenty of time to listen to podcasts, at least.
Yeah. So,
I get a lot of that done. So, basically, I wanted to bring you on, and just for our listeners to know, Emery here, he is sort of our local EDH legend. He is what we call, I don't have a nickname, or I don't know your nickname or anything. It's just, I at least think of you as, like, the EDH king of our town, I guess.
Oh, shucks. It's God, but, you know, king is okay, I guess.
Oh, I am so sorry, sir.
Most plebs don't understand the difference.
Yeah, and one of the other cool things is that I've been on tappedout.net for a long time now, like three to 4 years now. And you told me something that's quite interesting, because you said you frequent that site a lot. What's something that you can tell the users that you do on the site?
Well, on the site, I'm a top 100 member. I'm actually one of the people that goes out and helps people with their decks when they post them. Usually work with the EDH decks because that's my gig, but I've been known to, you know, help with Standard, help with Legacy, and every now and then, if I'm feeling frisky, I'll help out with a Vintage deck.
Ooh, Vintage.
Yeah.
So how long have you been playing Magic now?
Magic altogether, I've been playing since Urza's Saga, actually.
Oh, that's the same set I started in.
Yeah, about what, 16 years ago, almost 17 years.
God, has it been that long?
Roughly, yeah.
Fuck, man.
It's like, 'cause I was about 11 or 12 when I first got my set of Magic cards, and my mom, I'll never forget, she bought me a pack. I ripped it open, and there was a big black demon thing, and I was like, Mom, look how cool this is, and I thought she was going to pass out.
Have you always lived here in town?
Born and raised.
So, you probably know Frankie's then, the Frankie's Card Shop?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where I bought my first set of Magic cards.
Yep, I knew that before it was, I knew it before it was Frankie's.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it, but it used to be run by this old guy who had nothing but, like, baseball, football cards, and had a small little section for Magic.
Yep, he was also the guy that would buy your rares for a penny and sell them for $30. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I never sold him my rares or anything, but I just remember growing up here, you know, there was, like, no place to play for a long time.
Right.
It wasn't until... Yeah, there was that one place off of Deltona, right, over by Forest Oaks.
Quest,
that's right. And then...
That was, like, my old stomping grounds was Quest.
Yeah, I'd only visit there a couple times, and at the time... I was only getting D&D stuff because I wasn't into Magic at the time. I think I was in high school when that was around. And then when that went away, then what was it? Dragon's Cove was the next one?
Yeah, Dragon Cove. Dragon Cove had like six different buildings too.
Oh, did it?
Oh, yeah. It was everywhere. It was roaming around Spring Hill, just waiting for people to just fall into their trap.
Because I'd only known about the one, I guess their last... stop over here by Four Corners.
Well, that's the last one. Before that, they were actually in the same building, different module, and then they had two or three on 19, actually.
Oh, I did not know that.
Just kept moving down further, you know, down the chain.
So when you say trap, what do you mean? Just because I remember visiting that place twice, and it was pretty terrible both times.
It's really hard to say bad things about it because I met so many cool people and got a lot of inspiration from Magic there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the actual shop was just... I mean, I think everyone will agree. It just wasn't well put together.
Yes.
It was very much... You went there to hang out with your friends and play Magic, occasionally buy a card, but it was mostly kind of... It almost like it was run by the patrons more so than... the owner, because murdered there. I mean, I have very fond memories of walking up and being like, hey guys, I'm taking these five booster packs. Good night. Okay, man, have fun.
Oh, geez. But yeah, man, I didn't know that you started in Urza's, or maybe you told me once and I forgot. I don't remember. I barely remember what I did 5 minutes ago. So
yeah,
man,
who were you again?
I don't know. But yeah, I wanted to bring you on because, you know, I've had 19 episodes done so far, and I've barely talked at all, if not you know, any about EDH. And I wanted to bring you on because I'm slowly doing, you know, a bunch of episodes about formats, at least by now. I said, got like in my first few episodes, like, oh yeah, I'm going to do a whole episode series about formats. And then, you know, 15 episodes later, I still haven't gotten to it.
Well, procrastinators unite tomorrow, so.
Yes. But, yeah, I guess, you know, just to start off with, can you give a little explanation of EDH and what it is? I mean, most listeners probably know what it is, but in case they don't, you know, I would just like for you to give an explanation.
If I had to give an explanation to EDH or Commander, it would probably be the sandbox mode of Magic. You've got the smallest ban list out of any format. You've got just infinite potential. I mean, any format where Sol Ring is okay, you know, is going to be bonkers. But what it is a 100-card singleton that is based around one legendary creature, and you have to use its color identity in your deck, and only those colors are allowed in. So let's say, for instance, you are running a commander that's in Sultai, you know, green, black, blue. You can have zero things that have a red or a white mana symbol in it. Now, it being a 100-card singleton format means you can only have one of each card in the deck, except for basic lands, of course, because that would just be incredibly difficult in certain color combinations.
Yeah.
So the need for redundancy is key. Redundancy is the key in EDH, is probably the number one rule of EDH, is redundancy, redundancy, redundancy. So where you have a standard deck where you can have four dispels, let's say, if I wanted to have a counter suite in an EDH deck, we'll use the same Sultai deck that I was talking about, I would have to run things like Arcane Denial, the original counter spell, Dispel, Flusterstorm, Force of Will, Mana Drain, you know, all these different counter spells to add up to a decent counter spell suite. I call it sandbox because it just allows you to do whatever you want to. And I think that's one of the big appeals to the format, is you've got some guy goes, you know, I want to see a deck that does this. I want to see a deck that wins with Door to Nothingness. I've actually come across a Door to Nothingness deck, and I've lost to it multiple times. It is scary. And guy makes you sign his deck box when he beats you. I mean, it was like a rite of passage in my old card shop.
Holy crap. So, for people that don't know, Door to Nothingness, it's a 5-drop artifact. Door to Nothingness enters the battlefield tapped, and it has the ability that costs 2 white, 2 blue, 2 black, 2 red, 2 green. You tap it, sacrifice Door to Nothingness, target player loses the game.
Right.
That is awesome.
I mean, he would... all kinds of shenanigans you can do with it. He would run things like Goblin Welder, Master Transmuter, Mana Reflections, Rings of Bright Hearth was key in that deck, all kinds of untap and tap effects, just anything that would get Door to Nothingness out of the graveyard, out of the deck, into play, untapped, and able to be sprung probably 15 different ways. And it was just, you sat there watching him do it, and it made your head spin sometimes.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. See, and that's one of the things when I first started getting into Commander, I remember I used to go with this group who we used to play on D&D and, crap, what was it, GURPS or GURPS? Mm-hmm. But before we started role-playing, we would play a quick game of Commander. Well, quick, as in it would take an hour and a half. And the first Commander that was ever given to me was, what, Zedru?
Oh, good God.
And at first, when I first read him, I'm like, this guy sucks. What? He doesn't do anything. Until you sort of realize, like, oh, I can start giving people stuff that fucks them over.
Oh, yeah.
But it's this format really brings out what I love about Magic, And it's what I've talked about in other episodes, where there's so many cards in Magic altogether, and there's so many crazy combinations that when Wizards comes out with the next standard set, you know, they can't take account for every single card that is printed. Like, they can't figure out every single interaction this one card will, you know, will do. So they can print out a card now that does XYZ, but there's a card that they printed back in Alliances that will just make these two cards broken in EDH.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. It's just, you know, and it's the same thing with any, what's called like an eternal format, you know, Legacy, Modern. You'll have a card that really, you look at it when it's standard and you're like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But then you look at, you know, another dinky card from 15 years ago, and it's, this is the stupidest card I've ever seen. And you put them next to each other, and it's like, oh my god, it's the stupidest couple I've ever seen, but it's so good. It's so good, you know?
And that's one of my favorite things about Magic, is just discovering that, you know? And it's just, and to me, EDH is where you can really put your personality into a deck. You know, yes. You can be the sinister control person, which we all know there are people like that at our shop.
I wouldn't do such a terrible thing.
I don't mean just you, but there are some others. And then there are just some people, you know, that just like to build fun decks where, you know, to me, I've always had the attitude with EDH where, you know, I'm in it to have fun. And it's, if I lose, I lose. I don't really care. But if I win, hey, that's awesome, right? You know? And I love seeing those crazy-ass combinations. I remember you and I, we played one time. You were just, I don't know if you tested, were testing out or finishing the Omnath deck, the new green-red one.
Yes, I remember this game.
And you just, what was it, Boundless Realms, or?
Right, I Boundless Realms into Escape Shift.
That's right. Balance around Escape Shift, and I wasn't even mad. I'm like, that's fucking awesome.
You know, I can't do anything. I just lost the game instantly, but you know what? I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And it's those kind of interactions that are just hilarious, but it's the other thing that I notice that EDH tends to attract are the people that, you know, I guess, I don't know if sore loser is the right word, but just people that get extremely salty.
I've had a theory about this for a while now. I'm not sure if I've told you about it. I know every now and then if I run into somebody, especially a new player that looks kind of distraught that they just lost, EDH is more than just, your deck becomes more than just your deck. You know, there's people around the shop where if you look at them, you know, oh, that person runs this. I mean, I've seen people that actually call people by their deck name instead of their actual name. So it's one of those things that you're known for this deck. You've put time into it. You've put effort. It's slowly. I mean, you found all the cool interactions, and you're really excited about it. And then it doesn't do what you want it to do, and the game is just terrible. And because your deck's not working out, it feels like your entire reason for building this deck is just for nothing. I mean, I've been there, believe it or not. I've built a deck. I mean, still won because, you know, me, but it didn't do what I wanted it to do. So I was like, I'm taking this apart because it didn't get there the way I wanted it to get there. So you have these people that are taking it, you know, all this time and effort and building this 100-card deck. They're becoming known for it. And when they lose, it's kind of like you're insulting their child, you know? I have no justification. Sore losers are just sore losers, and I hate it. But I feel EDH has, it's because it's so niche and it's got just this, you know, weird, I guess, I don't know how to really explain it. You get this weird connection with your deck. It kind of becomes a part of you, kind of like you were saying, you know, you can see people's attitudes in their decks. And then it loses and it's, you know, it lost because of this or, you know, something stupid. And then you feel bad because it's, you know, I spent, you know, all this time finding 100 unique cards to do what I thought they were going to do, and they didn't do it. Now it's back to square one. So, I mean, but yes, I have noticed. I have sat down to Legacy tournaments. I mean, big 40, 50, 60 people legacy tournaments and have had people lose more gracefully than local EDH games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've definitely noticed that, too, when I've been to, you know, PPTQs, Standard Modern, and all that. And, I mean, playing so much Constructed with Standard Modern, I mean, after a while, you get used to losing, even though you don't want to lose. It just sucks. Right. But it's just, to me, it's when I go play EDH, it's for me, it's to relax. Because it's like, I just want to do some stupid shit, and, you know, if I lose, I don't care, you know. I played some Magic. But so as far as EDH goes, does it have its own sort of competitive format or anything, or?
On the record, for competitive EDH, you would probably run into Tiny Leaders, which is the 3-mana cost or below variant of the game. I don't really know much about it. I built one with a buddy of mine. We played it. We didn't have the most fun in the world. It kind of felt like Singleton Legacy. We already had Legacy decks. It didn't feel EDH enough for us. Then there's also French EDH. It's the 1v1 or dual commander EDH.
Okay.
It's got its own separate ban list. It's pretty decent. You know, a lot of the tutors are banned. A lot of the fast mana is banned. And that's one of the problems a lot of people have with multiplayer EDH, is the fast mana. So they've eliminated that. They've got rid of a couple of problem cards. And it's so hard to gauge level of competitiveness when you're playing in 4-person, 5-person, 6-person pods. So that's what Dual Commander is for. Completely different ban list, but in my eyes, it constricts your creative energy a little more than normal. So I try to stay away from it. I know our card shop is actually trying to implement a Dual Commander tournament every week. And I'm probably going to end up making a Dual Commander deck, because why not? However, it's not my favorite format. However, at PTQs, if you want to be that guy, you can sit down in their little casual, and I use big bunny rabbit ear quotes, their casual EDH tournament for like a box or something. Every now and then they'll throw like a beta soul ring or something your way. You can see and watch some of the most degenerate, disgusting decks you'll ever find. So, I mean, it's there. I'm guilty of building turn one, turn two, instant win, sorry for you, time to go home decks. So, I mean, it's there. However, in the spirit of EDH, it's frowned upon.
Yeah, and I can see that, especially when doing multiplayer, because, you know, because like we've said before, people just get salty, and it's like, well, I didn't even get to play or anything, and it's just, oh, you already win? You know, what's the point? So.
Right, and it's really hard to find, like, when you go to, like, our shop, I would say, is it's a weird divided meta at our shop. You've got the people that are playing to win, and you've got the people that are playing to have fun, and it's really hard to tell who's who sometimes. And you'll always have a game where it's different variant level of seriousness about the game. So everyone's decks kind of have to have, you kind of have to tone your deck down a little bit, but you still have to have that really hard, you know, spike to finish off a game if you have to. But I mean, I've been to places, there's a card shop about an hour away from us. I won on turn 15 and they thought that was too extreme. That was too fast.
Jeez.
I looked at him and I was like, guys, it's turn 15. It's been 3 hours. I don't even know where I live anymore.
Yeah. You know? Oh, jeez. No, but I know what you mean about our shop. The last time I played EDH is with two other guys. I don't remember who they were. But one of them was playing elves, just mono green elves. And the other one was, God, it was a blue-red commander. I cannot remember who. It wasn't Nin. I don't think it was Mizzix.
Was it Keranos? The god?
I don't think it was Karen. Oh god, I don't remember who it was, but it wasn't like a one that I was familiar with.
Arjun.
Maybe.
He mind moils whenever you cast a spell.
Yeah, it might have been that one.
He's the Sphinx from the new commander.
And I was playing my Alloro deck, and if I had to choose, I think my Krufix and Alloro deck are probably quote unquote the most competitive, I guess. And my Alloro deck just pretty much builds Pillow Fort, and I just deny you to do anything pretty much while I just sit back and gain life, and you know I decide to let you do something. And it just pretty much, I could tell the other two guys were just getting frustrated with me, and I'm just like, yeah, I mean, I get it. It's kind of frustrating, and I'm just countering everything they're doing or stopping them, and they can't attack me, and so they decide to both gang up on me and kill me, and then the blue-red guy also dies because the mono-green just gets a shit ton of elves and overwhelming stampede and kills everybody. So I'm just like, oh, well, I could have saved you next turn, but oh well.
Sorry, man. Sorry, I was dead because someone made poor life choices. Yeah. I get that all the time. But that's also another thing, too, is once you've established yourself, especially if you're in a small card shop, you've established yourself where multiple games you are the threat. I sat down with it's one of my pet decks. It's meant to kind of goof off and have fun. It's Ramirez de Pietro. And I'm not sure if I showed you this guy, but you need to check him out right now. He's an
old. Yeah, I'm looking at him up. Ramirez de Pietro, just a first strike 4/3. Dimir.
Yep. And what's cool is he's one of the only creatures in Dimir, I think, if not the only creature, that has first strike in Dimir colors. But I built him. I mean, he's a pirate. He's a pirate that does nothing. He's got first strike, that's it. I mean, so I built a deck to just kind of screw around, and I mean, it's got things like, you know, Kukemsa Pirates. It's got, you know, Merchant of Secrets, Merfolk Looter, Pirate Ship. You know, all these different nautical I mean, the closer I could get it to Pirates of the Caribbean in a deck, the better it was.
That's awesome. No, you haven't shown me this deck. This looks freaking hilarious.
I mean, it's super flavor. This is like, you know, the Cooking Channel version of EDH. It's all about the flavor. That's it. You know, it has no intentions of winning. It's just there to be funny. Can you believe that I had three people sit down at a table with me, and when they saw my general, went, nuh-uh, we know what you're going to do, and killed me in the first four turns?
Are you fucking serious?
Dead serious. That's one of
Jeez.
The... And that's another thing, one of the my pet peeves about EDH is people hold grudges. Terrible grudges. If you beat them one day, then I mean, you could play them 3 weeks later, and they will go after you like you're a stranger in the backyard and they're a pit bull. I mean, they're going to grab onto you and just never let go. You know?
Yeah.
Another deck I'd built, the owner of our card shop actually sat down and played with me, and I was playing Squee, Goblin Nabob. Another pet deck. Just thought it would be funny. You know, it's Squee. He's annoying. I built the deck to be as annoying as possible, and it beat him. Last night, he and I sat down to play a game of Magic, and all he did the entire time, from turn one until the turn where I convinced someone else to kill me so he couldn't kill me, all he did was go after me. Every chance he got. Now, it was him playing the new Odric, which was actually my deck he borrowed. We had Squee. We had Seton Elf Ball, which was my girlfriend's deck. And then we had a Prime Speaker Zagana draw-go deck. So who does he go after? Squee. I mean, it left such a bad taste in his mouth. He was like, no, uh-uh. I mean, we're talking, this is like a six-month-long grudge.
Oh, geez, that's hilarious.
So, I mean, it happens. But, it's, you know, it's just one of the many things about EDH. I mean, there's people that if I sit down and play with them, I wouldn't say it's a grudge, but it's definitely I know how you build your decks. I know you're going to sit there and do nothing and make everyone think you're not doing anything, and then you're just going to combo off and win two turns.
Yeah.
So, I guess you could say I kind of target people based off of prior experiences, but it's never a, oh, you know what? You beat me last game fair and square. Time to kill you. You know, it's never been something like that.
So it's not malicious then?
No. Well, I mean, just playing Magic in general, I'm malicious. But, you know, not when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So have you been to a lot of competitive EDH events or anything?
I have been to about 10. Unfortunately, about 7 of them were not truly competitive.
How so?
You'll get a lot of people. There was a point in EDH, I mean, everyone kind of goes through it. I mean, I call it the EDH process, or the commander process. New EDH players just want to get that win. You know, they want to win by any means necessary, and it's all about winning. And then eventually they calm down and become, you know, like you or I. You know, if I win, I win. I'm not going to roll over, but I'm not going to play a super high-powered deck that's just, I'm going to win, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, I've played long enough that I've got it out of my system. But there was a time in EDH, about 3 years ago, so it was, EDH was kind of still in its toddler phase. It wasn't really super popular. There were still people that were, you know, what's EDH? What's Commander? Where shops to try and get new players in and just try and get money would say competitive EDH. And I'm saying super big bunny rabbit ear quotes this time. I played 5-color Hermit Druid.
What the fuck? Which was
okay. It's gonna take a little while to explain this.
Okay.
5-color Hermit Druid is based around the card Hermit Druid. He says you pay, I believe it's a green and a colorless, and tap him to search or reveal a top card of your library until you reveal a basic land card. Everything else goes into your graveyard. The basic land goes into your hand.
Okay.
So you run it in a 5-color deck where there's no basic land.
What?
Okay. So the main goal of the deck is turn 1, turn 2, you cast Hermit Druid. Preferably turn 1. Turn 2, if you cast him, he has to have haste. So the entire deck is maybe 4 creatures, 5 creatures. The rest is counters, kills, and tutors to get Hermit Druid. The general you use for this is actually Scion, because he's your backup win condition.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got your Hermit Druid turn 1, turn 2. You activate him whenever you can. You get your entire deck into your graveyard. Now you've got a Narcaneba in your deck, so it comes out for free.
Wait, a Narca... How do you spell it? Narca...
Omoeba. NARCOMOEBA.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, it's the old, it's from the old, Dredge Legacy deck.
You know? Okay.
You mill it in, it goes out for free. Then you've got things like, Fate Stitcher. So Fate Stitcher's in your graveyard. By this point, you should have a blue mana open. So you tap the blue mana to unearth Fate Stitcher. Now you've got your 3 creatures in the field. You also have a Dread Return in your deck. So you sacrifice those 3 creatures to Dread Return Angel of Glory's Rise. Angel of Glory's Rise reads, when it comes into play, you exile all zombies in play and return all humans from your graveyard to the battlefield. Well, the 2 humans that are caught up in this are a zombie and Lab Maniac. They come onto the field, you tap a zombie to draw a card and win the game.
Gee.
And if they respond to it, you just tap, you tap whatchamacallit, you tap, not the Terminator.
Hermit Druid?
Because he's a wizard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, they're both wizards. So you just go, okay, well, in response, cool, I'll draw a card. And the way the stack works, it's going to go, you're going to draw a card, they're going to kill a creature, and then you're going to draw a card. So either way, you win.
Wow.
So. Wow,
that's insane.
Yeah, so that was a deck that, I mean, my friends and I, we did everything we could to really, you know, tighten this deck list up. I borrowed old dual lands, you know, Alpha, Beta, Unlimited Revised Duels. I had all the fetches, everything. I mean, this deck was bonkers. I mean, and it was consistent. If it didn't win by turn 4, I think the only time it didn't win by turn four is because Hermit Druid was actually still in my deck box. I hadn't taken it out. It stayed there. I was like, son of a bitch. So,
oh, geez.
I went to my first tournament. I went to and was all right, you know. I sit down and I'm like, oh man, this is going to be rough. This is my first time playing competitive EDH. I don't know what's going on. And it just, it sticks with me to this day because of how funny it was. I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, my turn one, I'm dropping like two lands via like exploration, and then I'm, you know, exiling Elvish Spirit Guide and Simeon Spirit Guide to get more mana to drop Hermit Druid, and I'm going to town, you know, turn one. And I'm like, this is, you know, oh God, I'm never gonna, you know, this isn't how it's supposed to be. People are gonna beat me. I'm doing terrible. So
what was everyone else playing?
Well, the guy next to me was running five color and he had Scion too. So I'm like, oh God, he's playing Hermit Druid. This is going to be terrible. I mean, it was just one person was playing Arkham Dagzen. So it's like, oh, well, and another person was playing Azami, which, I mean, all four of us technically should have been playing stupidly competitive combo decks because Arkham and Azami are the two mono blue meanies that you see them everywhere you go in competitive Magic, or competitive EDH, I have to say.
Okay. So, yeah.
I know, their turn goes by and they're, you know, just land. And I'm like, oh man, they're doing something. They're doing something. And then it hits. The guy playing Scion's to my right. And he's like, all right, guys, big play here. And I start freaking out. He drops a Plains. And I'm like, a Plains? What? You don't have a basic Plains in this deck. And he drops a Yoked Ox. Yoked Ox is a vanilla 0/4 creature for one white.
Yeah.
None of them had any idea what they were doing. And they had no idea what I was about to do to them. It was the most... I mean, I played and I won. And they're like, well, do you mind if we keep playing the game? And I'm like, sure. You know, turn two, I'd won the game. I'm happy I go on to the next round. Arkham Dagzen was running mono blue wizards for some reason. Not artifacts, which is what you normally see, because he tutors out artifacts and sits there and constantly blows up the board. And then Azami was mono blue wizards that tried to beat people in the face with wizards instead of drawing with them. And it was just, I remember sitting there watching them, and it was like going to some weird jungle tribe and like watching them try and do what you do on a daily basis.
Yeah, you know,
it was like watching someone that had never seen a vacuum cleaner try to use one. I mean, it was
I've actually got a story about that, about a vacuum cleaner.
Okay.
But did the wizard guy at least have like coat of arms or something? Or
that's how he was. He talked about winning. He talked about his big win con, and I'm like, well, for Azami back then, it was Mind Over Matter and Temple Bell. You know, make everyone draw out. His big win con was like 15 wizards and coat of arms. And I'm just baffled by this. Because they were talking about how competitive their decks were, and it's like, oh my, I thought maybe I had ascended to some level of awesomeness that just no one could fathom. And it was just me. But thank God the second round I ran into, you know, more combo decks. But, I mean, that first round, it was rough.
Well, thankfully you won second turn because that guy with the Yoked Ox, you were going to be wrecked next turn.
Always watch out for the Yoked Ox. And Kraken Hatchling. Don't let its cute little appearance fool you. That bastard's going to hurt you some way or another.
All right, now you have to build a deck, a blue-white deck with Kraken Hatchling and Yoked Ox, and figure out some way to just wreck people's faces with it.
So I have an idea for this already. I'm not saying it's going to work.
Go on.
But
it will, though. It will.
But it'll kill somebody, and it's going to make them feel real bad.
That's all that matters, as long as you kill someone.
I mean, I've done stuff like that. I mean, right now I'm running Kami of the Crescent Moon. It started off as just a joke deck. You know, it just makes people draw cards, and he's a cute little blue butt crack monster from the Kamigawa block.
Yep, I like that guy.
And I don't think I've sat down to a game yet where it hasn't just been like, sorry guys, on your upkeep you're taking 60 damage and drawing 100 cards. Oops, you know? Sorry.
Oh, man. Yeah, I did see your little write-up you did on Tapped Out about Kami of the Crescent Moon, and I gotta say, it's pretty impressive. It looks like a fun deck. I mean, I'd be pretty interested to play against it, even though I'd lose, but it would just be, I just want to see it, you know, in person.
It's one of those things where, I mean, definitely on paper, and I've had on the Tapped Out forums, there's actually someone that was asking me a lot about it, you know, asking about how competitive it is. It's really hard to understand a deck like Kami or even Squee. Like, Squee is kind of like the special cousin of Kami. You know, it's just, it's not quite there. But Kami itself is just, you know, you run it with a bunch of, I'm going to make everyone draw cards effects. You know, the last thing you want to do in Magic is let your opponent draw a bunch of cards. However, what you make sure you do is that you draw into, or you make sure that you're drawing into nothing but answers or win cons. And it's just, people never, even people that have played against this deck 4 and 5 times, they always make the same mistake. The first time they play, it's, oh my god, this is so fun, I get to draw all these cards, and then like slowly it's, oh god, I've got 4 cards left in my library, and next turn I have to draw 25 cards. This deck sucks, you know? So what they'll do is next game, they kill Kami. I'll be like, you know, turn 2, Kami, kill it. Oh, well, I mean, okay, if you really want to. Next turn, Howling Mine. I mean, same thing. Same basic principle. So it's one of those things, people don't really know what to answer or when to answer it. And that's what I love about it, because it leaves everyone scratching their head like, oh, last game he beat me with, you know, the flipped Jushi Apprentice, made me draw 60 cards. I'm killing that. Oh, crap. You know, he's got 4 Iron Maidens out, and I've got 10 cards in hand. I'm dead. Or, sorry, 14 cards in hand. I'm dead.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, it's just, and it's, it started off as a joke. It was just, you know what, I'm going to make this, it's going to make everyone draw, give everyone a false sense of security, and then we'll see how it goes from there. But I mean, it's one of, it's weird when you see a deck that's got something like Howling Mine, Dictate a Crucifix, you know, Font of Mythos, and in the same deck you've got like a Zombie Lady of Scrolls, Kozilek the Butcher of Truth, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor. And that's what I like about it, is you sit there and you're constantly, people constantly have to guess. And I guess that's kind of one of the things I've always wanted to do with a Magic deck, is make a Magic deck, I mean, any kind, where you have people watching one hand while your other hand is doing all the work, just like an actual Magic trick.
Yeah, you've got that's them, a good way of putting it.
You've got them going, oh, cool, this guy's making me draw cards. And they're, you know, it's like, what are they going to draw into? A big fat creature, a combo piece. I'm drawing into everything that's going to stop everyone from doing whatever I want to. It's a, I think in my write-up, I call it, you know, I'm drawing into a handful of when's the next game. You know?
Yeah.
And it's, I don't usually like to toot my own horn when it comes to decks. I like to try pretty, stay pretty modest. But Kami is probably one of the coolest decks I've ever built. I mean, it's just, I love it. So.
And so you say in your write-up that it's won 4 tournaments. Where is it won tournaments at?
It has won 4 online Cockatrice tournaments, actually.
Oh, nice. Were they money tournaments or just...
No, just Cockatrice. It's one of those things that's like MTG Online.
Yeah.
But its servers get shut down constantly. You constantly have to find, you know, new downloads for it, new everything.
Oh, I know.
You've got to go through all these. It's kind of like the black market of Magic. You know, you have to know a guy who has like that weird cousin that, you know, got mixed up with like the cartel, and you know, you have to know a guy to get into it. Anytime I build a deck, I have a buddy who is kind of like that guy. He knows, everything. So anytime that I make a new deck that I kind of want to screw around with, because I don't have MTG Online, I've never used it. It's always felt kind of clunky to me. Watching videos of it on, you know, online, it's just, God, that looks clunky.
It is. It's very clunky. I'll get some limited out of it once in a while, but that's about it. Or I may build a cheap modern deck and play it on there. But other than that, I'd stick with Cockatrice or X-Mage.
Right. You know, it's just, it's, and it's weird that, I mean, Cockatrice and those other programs are actually, I mean, feel more fluid and feel more user-friendly. But I digress. So I just was like, you know what? I wonder how good Kami can do, because, you know, going on Cockatrice is kind of like going to the Kumite, you know, from Kickboxer. You know, I wonder, let's just see. Let's see what happens when I throw this big, you know, blue blob in the middle of, you know, Kickboxer, and let's see what happens. And I've played a 60-person tournament, a 22-person tournament, and I want to say the next two were like 15 to 17, and as it is on Tapped Out right now, it won. I mean, we're talking, I was going up against Arkham Dagsons, I was going up against Hermit Druids, I was going up against Azamis, Tassigers, Damia, and it was like, good God, man, what have I done? What have I made?
You broke EDH even more.
You know, I broke the butt crack monster. I put a crack right in the back of them.
So what's the EDH community like on Cockatrice? I mainly play Cockatrice for modern and standard for deck testing, for either like when I either want to build a new deck or I'm practicing for a PPTQ. And usually the people on there are either really shitty or they'll just come up with super shitty non-meta standard and modern decks when you want to test against meta decks, and they'll get mad that you beat them really bad, or, oh God, it's frustrating as fuck.
The EDH players on there, if you do tournament mode and you know, you really, you can find a lot of really good players there. A lot That's of them good. I've learned, actually live close by, like in Tampa. So, you know, I'll call them and say, hey, you know, let's get on, or blah, blah, blah. And we usually, through Tapped Out or through Facebook, whatever, we'll switch, you know, deck ideas back and forth. There's actually a lot of really good players. However, you will never find a more concentrated group of jerks and assholes ever. They're the kind of guys that'll beat you and be like, hey man, why don't you give me your email address and we'll shoot ideas back and forth, and they will sign you up for like weird bestiality porn or something. I mean, so it's like, not only did I beat you, but every other week you're going to watch this dog plow this girl. Sorry for you.
Oh, geez.
Terrible, terrible people. Really good decks, though. Really good players, but just, you know, the internet veil. They say whatever they want to because it's the internet. You know, a bunch of nerds. What?
Fucking nerds. Yeah,
no one's stopping them from saying anything. You know, if I believed everything that Cockatrice players told me, my mom is, you know, a lesbian prostitute from New Guinea. It's the equivalent of playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, or playing League of Legends.
Ooh, yeah, that's... Yeah, I'll give you that one. Yeah, it's pretty much like playing League. You win, you're going to be called every name in the book. You lose, you're going to be called every name in the book. I mean...
Pretty much.
It's bad. But, I mean, it's a free program that you don't have to pay for. You don't have to pay for the cards. You just put whatever you want to in. It's kind of like everyone goes ham. So you get some crazy decks, which is why it was very surprising to see Kami do as well as it did. Because it shouldn't have.
And so have you brought it to the shop yet?
I actually had a version of Kami that I brought to the shop for one day. I brought it probably 3 or 4 months ago. It it won both games that it played, and I was told to never bring it back again.
So you got some people mad at you? What?
It wasn't. It was a lot different than what you see now. It's what I called 30 counter Kami.
Oh, God.
It was nothing but Howling Mind effects and counter spells. That was it. And it still won.
Jeez.
Give me one sec real fast.
I'm having
some mic issues. Alrighty. Can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you.
Sweet. Alrighty. So, yeah, it was 30 counters and Kami. And Howling Mind effects. And pretty much it sat there and did nothing. Absolutely nothing. And people were having fun drawing cards. I mean, I didn't even have to force them to draw to win. I didn't have anything like Iron Maiden or anything like that. It was just, I win. People were drawing. I mean, the game took about 3 hours to play.
Oh, God.
It was miserable. It was absolutely miserable. I mean, it got to the point where even, you know, I was sitting there like, oh, God, someone just kill me. And they look at my hand and it's like, but they can't kill me. It was just all kinds of rough. But I was told, you know, I've had decks like this before. They perform a little grindier than I'd like them to be. I had Creature Whistle Oro. Accidentally had creatures, or was creatureless. Didn't realize I didn't have any kind of special win con. It was just game locking. Not game locking to where no one could play, just game locking to where we didn't do anything. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, I can't really do anything, I guess. Play my land and play this creature and pass. I mean, and that was it. So 3 hours into the game, I'm looking at a tutor for it. I was like, okay, I got to find a way to finish this. I had not put creatures in the deck. I had not put any kind of combo in the deck to win.
Oh, jeez.
So for about 65 turns, I sat there with Aloro, draining life one at a time. And I wanted to cry by the end of it.
You, my friend, are a masochist.
I mean... But now, that also stems one of my favorite table-flipping moments of all time.
Ooh, do tell.
This was an 8-man game where I was playing my Aloro deck, and I was at a new shop because I was trying to spread the word of EDH. Now, I had played Aloro because Aloro is one of those generals where people see them, and they see what the deck could do, and you can sit there, and I mean, you can build Aloro 6 different ways. It's great.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of show off what Commander was like. And I ended up turning off about 10 people to it because we had 8 people watching and then significant others were watching too. So this one kid finally thinks he's going to beat me. Now, I had played probably 10, 11 turns previous to this kid's turn. I had played Glacial Chasm. I couldn't receive damage, you know, it was great. And the cumulative upkeep with Aloro didn't matter because I was getting about 200 life a turn.
Oh my god, I want this land for my Aloro deck.
Oh, it's great. It comes in front of all the lands too, I believe. It's beautiful.
How fucking much is it? I'm looking it up right now. Oh, that's not bad at all. Yeah. It's like 40 cents.
Yeah.
Or I could get the From the Vault one for $8.
From the Vault one, trust me.
It looks pretty.
But I mean, my Aloro deck was, you know, it was all static effects. So I was gaining 25, 50 life every turn because of, you know, Allhelmert's Archive and just a plethora of things. So I guess he had forgotten about it. And he went to town. He was running green-blue Momir Vig. And I was excited for him because Momir Vig is kind of like my homeboy. It's one of the first decks I ever completely foiled out. So it was like, yeah, you know, good for you. You're playing Momir Vig. Awesome. I'm proud of you. And he probably crater hoofed 70 times. I mean, he sat there, every kind of blue and green janky creature combination to bounce stuff and bounce, you know, enchantments and artifacts to put him back into play to untap land. I mean, all this crazy stuff. And he's like, I'm swinging at you for like 700,000. And he's like, you lose. I didn't want to say it, but I had to say it. I couldn't say it, though. I mean, the words just wouldn't... It felt so bad. The words just wouldn't come out of my mouth. So all I did was slide, because he was right next to me. I just slid my glacial chasm over to his field. And I was like, sorry, man.
Oh, my God.
He takes his deck, puts it together, and was like, you know, it's okay. You know, the game's lasted long enough. I kind of need to go home anyway. And in a split second, he hulks out. I guess he just realized that, like, what had happened. And he's like, no, that's not how it's going to happen. And he throws his deck, across the store. Cards are everywhere, just sprinkling down, like, you know, confetti at a parade. And he goes rushing out the front door. And I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I've made people mad in Magic. It happens.
Oh, we all have, you know. Yeah.
So, I mean, the respectable thing to do is, you know, try to. I mean, if they'll allow you to, you shouldn't walk up and be like, hey, man, you know, sorry, I just destroyed you out of nowhere. You know, I usually like to do something where along the lines of, you know, hey, man, you know, you played a really good game. I really liked your deck. You know, if you ever want to swap ideas around or something, you know, let me know, because I was really impressed with it. I mean, in fairness, his Momir Vig deck had stuff in there that I was like, I didn't even think about that for my deck. And it was like pure genius stuff.
Yeah.
So I walk out, and then the kid won't look at me, and I'm like, hey, man, listen, you know, it's cool. You know, I've been in the same position you are. You know, I've thrown decks before. I was 12 once. I mean, and I feel bad because the kid's like 15. You know, I didn't say that to him. I was like, I've been in your same position. It's really tough when, you know, you have a frustrating, really grindy game like that. And I was like, but I really did enjoy your deck. And the kid turns around, and it's all I can do not to laugh, because in my entire Magic career, the 16 or 12, however many years I've been playing, I've never made someone cry. Aloro,
oh my God,
brought the tears. He was so frustrated that he didn't know what else to do except attack me, knowing that he couldn't attack me. And then, I guess, in getting caught up in the frustration, he ran outside and cried.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, it's just...
I told him he could wipe his tears on my pillow fort. And...
Oh, man. Yeah, that's... Oh, my God. It's... I don't know when I've had my fair share of salty Magic players. I mean, not just in EDH, but in Standard and Modern. And, you know, I've been, I don't want to say, I mean, I've definitely been salty, but it's more, it's never really directed at the person. It's more directed at myself, as in, why do I feel like I can't fucking play Magic today? Why am I feeling like I'm so terrible at this game?
Right.
You know, but it's, I guess I can understand it, because we know some people at our shop that definitely get mad, and I've seen them throw decks and all that, and it's just
you almost have
to wonder where it's like there's something else going on, where it's you know, you're not just mad at the game, there's something going on personally too.
Who hurt you, you know?
Yeah. Like, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, and that's another weird thing too, though, is, I mean, and that's what's cool about card shop mentality, though, is you see those players, and at first you're like, man, this dude is, like, whacked. But you walk outside, and you're like, hey, man, is everything okay? And you find out, you know, and I'm not trying to get really emotional or anything, but you find out, you know, so-and-so's mom just passed away. So-and-so,
yeah,
you know, his girlfriend just broke up with him. Didn't get the job he wanted. And it's like, oh, man, dude, that sucks. And then you spend, and that's, you know, card shop mentality. You spend the rest of the night building this person up, and then the next week they just come in and just obliterate people. And, you know, it's one of the good things about, you know, potentially, I guess, volatile situations when it comes to magic is you have people there that are like, you know, all right, man, what's wrong? You know, who hurt you? What's going on here?
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. Like, past few weeks, if anyone has seen me at the shop, especially during FNM, they probably know that I haven't really been myself at playing standard, where it's just like I'm making terrible calls. I'm just giving up really easily. It's like I've been extremely stressed lately. It's I finally closed on my house this week, it's been the stress of not only worrying about whether I'm going to get the house or not, but also the stress of I've got major projects coming up at work. It's, you know, I've got personal family stress going on, and it's just, it's like I get away from magic I go out to the shop to get away from it all. And then it's like, I come here and it's like, I don't even know how to play magic, where I'm just like, motherfucker. It's like, nothing's going right. What the fuck?
Look at your cards and you're like, when did I replace my deck with Korean foils? I don't understand. Oh gosh. Just, I forgot how to mana.
And I'm sure you've had those days where it's just like, you cannot win. And it's just, and it's not so much I expect myself to win all the time, but at least play a decent game of magic, you know?
Right. You know, it's, you don't, no one goes in wanting to lose, but no one also go into losing big. You know, it's like, you know, the best you can do is go, I really hope I don't die with my pants down. And that's kind of what it's like in magic. You know, I really hope I don't lose because I just did something really stupid, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's, something I've done many, many times.
Yes. I have died with my pants down numerous times.
Yeah. Especially in, World of Warcraft. I've died with my pants
down. Oh yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, so where do you see EDH in 5 years from now? Do you still see it getting bigger, more popular? Do you see, I don't know, maybe the competitive scene growing, or what are your thoughts on it?
I see it. There was a time actually earlier this year where I kind of thought that EDH had plateaued. And it really hasn't, especially with Wizards now supporting the format with the new commander sets every year. I feel like every time a new commander set comes out, it just kicks everything in the overdrive. And I think the problem with a lot of, especially like EDH in our area, everyone in our area has played EDH for about 2 or 3 years now. Yeah. So they get it. You know, they've seen most of it. Nothing's really new to them. But when commander comes out, everyone comes out of the woodwork with these new decks, you know, wanting to see the new decks, have new ideas. I think if we had a biannual set for Commander, we would see steady interest in it. Because not like Standard or, you know, Modern or Legacy, where you've got, you know, every expansion is pretty much designed with those formats in mind. And you get maybe, out of 200 cards, 10 decent EDH cards, maybe two really good ones. So there's not really a lot to get excited about with new sets as far as that's concerned. I mean, you might get a new legendary creature, but, I mean, with the exception of, like, the Gitrog monster, which is just banana sandwich, it's probably been a year. I think Tassigar was, like, the last big thing to come out for EDH generals. So, I mean, you don't get a lot of, it's just one of those things where newer areas with newer players, you're going to see an interest in it longer. Players that have been around for a while, they're going to lose. It's going to, you know, just kind of like the tide. You know, new commander set comes out, woo, interest. But with that, I think overall, we're going to see probably, I would hope to see, like, maybe two commander sets a year, if not commander sets, and then some kind of supplementary card set, like Conspiracy, was really popular for EDH. So I would like to see something along those lines, where you've got here's the new commander set. We got your commander precons and your 15 new cards. 6 months later, here is, you know, whatever expansion that's meant specifically for EDH. And I think that would help a lot of stores get behind it too, because now I've got something I can sell you more than once a year, other than singles. Because, I mean, EDH players go after 15-cent singles like, you know, old women in Tampa go after pills. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I would like to see it. I think in reality, we're probably at the plateau. I hate to sound grim, but a plateau is a whole lot better than depression.
Yeah, that's true.
In a good spot. The rules committee, I actually just was talking to some of the rules committee yesterday. they're always, it's not like they, you know, meet up in their robes holding torches in a dungeon, you know, once every fifth moon and talk about rules. They're actively every day sitting down at a card shop and going, well, what about this card? You know, maybe this card, this and that. So in, what's nice is that it's not this feeling of, well, the rules committee doesn't care, so why should we care? I mean, it's very much a, they care, so I care. You know, I care that they care about me caring. It's careception, if you will. So the community is really there, and it's thriving, and it's nice. However, it's almost really hard to see. Our card shop, you probably have 8 to 10 EDH players a day. But when you go to, like, a really heavy metropolitan area like Tampa, I walked into 3 different card shops and saw 16 to 20 different Commander games going on. And we're not talking...
That's awesome.
We're not talking, like, you know, one-on-ones or, you know, three-man free-for-alls. We're talking, like, 4 to 6 player games. These places were packed, and it wasn't their Commander day. It was just free play time.
Wow.
So, I guess it's hard to judge from our area, but if I had to judge from, you know, a more dense densely populated area, it's definitely like keeping up with the other formats. It's not going to be going anywhere anytime soon, hopefully.
No, and I think with now that Wizards is officially supporting it with supplemental products, I don't think it will go anywhere because, like you said, and also R&D. I don't know if they've outright admitted, but, you know, every so often, you know, they'll print out cards that seem to be just for Commander in sets. Like, Shadows of Innistrad had the Gitrog monster. There have been a number of other cards, you know, like the Great Aurora or Seasons Pass could be, you know, considered Commander Commander cards as well.
99 times out of 100, if it has a mana cost of over 7, it's going to go in someone's EDH deck.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I guess that's the cool thing. I mean, you have, you know, and it's also having the eye for it too. I mean, I remember when Return to Ravnica came out, right as I was getting into Commander really heavy, and people were going on and on. Oh, what was it? Oh, about Goblin? I think Goblin Electromancer. You got to make sure instant sort. Cost yeah. One less. You know, people are going on and on and on about him for, is it EDH decks? I remember sitting there going, do you guys not see Cyclonic Rift? I don't think you guys know what Cyclonic Rift does. Let me explain you something real fast. So, I mean, every now and then, and really, I mean, as far as power, I'd say it's about every, as far as normal sets, not like the commander boxes, you probably get one just, this is going to be a staple, everyone is going to run a card in EDH. So, I mean, you know, 1 year it was Cyclonic Rift. The next year it was Prophet of Crufix. You know.
Oh, my poor Prophet. Yeah,
you know, the next year it was Nykthos. And if you're running monocolor and you're not running Nykthos, unless you're running some kind of weird storm deck, you know, it's like you're doing it wrong. So, oh, I mean, yeah. Once a year we get, you know, really cool cards from that. And I'd like to see kind of oomph a little more, I guess you could say. Because it's sometimes, you know, I look at new sets and it's like, I find myself trying to force the new cards into my deck. Where it's like, I really want this to work. I really want this to be something. It's not something, but I'm going to force it to be something. And it usually doesn't end very well. But, yeah, you know, every set's got something. I mean, and it also depends on how casual or, you know, competitive you are. You know, I don't know the name of it, but the new Black Tutor, where you discard your hand and tutor for 3 cards. What is it called?
Oh, God, it's the Black Mythic.
Right, I've got like 10 of those stupid things, by the way. I open up 3 boxes and you get 10, and I was like, well, maybe it's something, and it's not, but...
Yeah, I don't think I even got one of them.
It's one of those things, I want to say it's like 7 mana, you discard your hand, you tutor for 3 cards. In our group, you will never see that run by anybody.
Oh, yeah.
However, in one of the groups, like I mentioned a lot earlier, you know, where turn 15 kills are like, whoa, man, slow down. That's a powerhouse. And I think that's another good thing about EDH is you will gravitate towards a meta or a group of people that play at your same speed. You know, and sometimes that takes a lot of self-realization. I mean, it's kind of like me and Standard. I thought when I played Standard, I was the end-all be-all for Magic. I was the greatest thing there was because I would win Standard every now and then. But it's because my group, I was above my group. And I don't mean that as in, like, you know, I was a higher caliber than the rest. But it's just, as far as player skill, I was just above them. You know, you go to another shop and you're playing Delver, you know, and you're like, all right, let's go. And you walk in there and everyone there is running Delver and you get your butt kicked and you decide you're going to play EDH because Standard sucks. You know, it's
is there a little story that we have to know?
Nothing really. Well, before Colossal, I would go to 2 different card shops and I would run the house with my, I mean, this is M12, M13 era, I want to say. I built Delver, you know, it was blue, white, red Delver, America Delver almost, because I had gut shots and you had your Geist of St. Drafts and Snapcaster Mages and whatnot. And I had gotten stupidly lucky. I bought one box when I got back into Magic because I had taken a couple of years break. I bought one box and had enough dollar value in that box to trade people to get all the pieces to my Delver deck.
Oh, nice.
So, except for like 2 Snapcaster Mages, but I wasn't going to... I think I only ran 2 anyway. So Delver was a pretty challenging deck to beat because it either milled you out or it milled itself. It beat you in the face. It had mana leaks, which, I mean, at the time, mana leak was like, oh my god, there's nothing better than mana leak, you know. It had Ponder. It was just, it was everything you expected from a blue deck. And that's why I loved it so much. I mean, it was a really cool deck to get back into Magic with.
Yeah.
And, I mean, at the 2 stores that I would play, it was just, I would walk in the F&Ms, and it was, oh, crap. Oh, God. It's an even week. He's here this week. Oh, man. What are we going to do? I decided to take a trip to Tampa 1 week. I'm like, you know, I'll give both of those card shops a break and I'll go to Tampa. I played at Armada Games for a grand total of 7 minutes. I drove an hour and a half to play 7 minutes of Magic, got so utterly destroyed there that I vowed I would probably never play Standard again.
Dude, Armada is cutthroat. I've only been there once for Standard, and it was just, it was between M15 had just come out, and I built my first Standard deck, and it was some shitty Insole Artifact control deck, and I didn't know anything about the store, you know, how competitive it was, and I'm just like, oh, everybody's playing mono black or mono blue. Awesome. And I lost terribly.
And you're sitting there, you know, engulfed in flames. This is fine. I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh, pack rat, and now you have like 15 rats out? Oh, cool. Awesome. I'm going to play an ornithopter.
I'm going to play...
Turn 5 to ornithopter?
If an ornithopter, I'm going to curl into a ball on the ground and cry deeply.
Because it's one of the things I remember going there is I remember playing against this girl, and she gave off this really weird vibe, like she... Maybe she did this intentionally, that she didn't know what she was doing, and maybe she just did that to trick up people. Cause she would just give off this, like, she would just sort of space out or something, you know, just like you're wondering, like, what the fuck is she doing, you know?
And then all of a sudden, she
maybe, and then all of a sudden, like the next turn, she'd kill you. Like, wait, what the fuck just happened?
But wait, there was time now.
And she was like probably one of the weirdest people I played against, because she would just, like, you would try to talk to her and be like, hey, how's it going? You know, hey, you know, my name's Matt. You know, what's your name? She would just, like, sort of look at you, like, as if she's, like, studying your face. Like, hi. Just like, oh, whoa, what? Like, I'm just trying to be friendly, and you're just, I don't know, what are you doing to my mind?
the problem is you guys have two different internal songs playing. Your song's all like, 'cause I'm happy. Her song is all like, hey, hey, ho, ho. I mean, you've got Sunshine and like crazy cartoon characters dancing around, and she's got like angels fighting six-headed demons and like.
Yeah, that wasn't the last time I've been to Armada, but that was the last time I played Standard there. I do want to go back because I'm getting a little bored of the meta at Colossal, because it's very. And there's a lot of non-meta stuff that happens in Standard there, and I'm just, I need to be challenged by better players in order to get better. So, and I'm just not getting it there, but it's also the closest place for me, and I don't feel like traveling that far to just for an FNM, because I'm lazy.
Right. Well, I mean, if you ever want to go, let me know. I'm always down to go to Armada.
Yeah, man, that's, Well, do you have a Standard deck at all? I mean, I actually just finished my second Standard deck. I've got
Were you going to say Bant Company? Are you that guy?
Well, no, I do have Bant Company. Yeah, I know. But I also have Grixis Control, but I just realized that my Jaces are split between both decks. I don't know if you have two other Jaces.
I do.
Baby
Jaces.
Oh,
yeah, I got Baby Jaces.
Yeah, so if you ever wanted to play either one, you'd have to just slip some Jaces in.
We're talking about creature Jace, right? Flip Jace?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, Baby Jace.
Baby Jace. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, I guess I did have to change his name. It's Happy Jace now for the Jace Bellerin. Because it used to be had Baby Jace, which was Jace Bellerin, and then you had Mean Jace, which was... Mind Sculptor.
Yeah.
But, you know, now there's an actual Baby Jace.
Yeah, because he's technically the youngest Jace. In terms of, I guess, storyline or whatever. Since it's his origin card, right. Whatever. But yeah, that was just one of the more weirder experiences. She was probably one of the weirdest players. Well, actually, no, I've played against some fucking bizarre people. I'm sure you have too. You're just like
I played a pre-release for Battle for Zendikar. My first round, I mean, I was playing green Eldrazi. I mean, it's just, I was like, I've got the ramp for it. I can do this. I got this. Cool deck.
Yeah.
Won both rounds, and the end of the last round, I mean, everything was going fine. Guy was kind of quiet, kind of weird. And then he pointed to one of my cards to ask if he could see it. And this guy's fingernails were like an inch and a half long. And I thought they were painted until he tapped on the card and dirt, like literal, like I just got done digging in the dirt, fell on my card. I looked at my deck because he'd been touching my cards. I just hadn't realized it. You know, I hadn't really been paying attention to him. Realized there's no money in these cards because when I do pre-release, I never make my money back.
Oh, yeah, I you have that luck,
so
too.
So I grabbed the deck. I told the shopkeep, I'm going to withdraw, gave him my deck, and walked out of the store and never came back.
It was that bad?
It was the most disgusting thing. I mean, I work in a hospital in the ER, and that was one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen.
Oh, jeez. So was he... Crap, what's that dirt kid from the Peanuts?
Oh,
what's his
please.
Name?
He made that guy look like Dapper Dan.
Oh, jeez.
This was... And then, like, when you notice stuff like that, you start noticing other things, like, he had, like, a hole in his face. And it was like, what else is wrong with you? And then he, like, was talking, and he realized he probably hadn't seen a toothbrush in... ever. God. I mean... Like, he just brushed his teeth with other people's worst teeth.
Just brushed his teeth with trash.
Yeah. With his fingers. The dirt under his fingernails was actually from his teeth.
Dude, and it's... That's one thing that drives me crazy. Because, you know, especially people outside of Magic. You know, the stereotypical Magic player. A dirty, disgusting nerd. Who, you know, doesn't shower and all that. And then you do meet those people and you're just like, come on, man, at least take a shower. Yeah. You know, why are you coming to the shop in dirty ass clothes and you smell like shit? And it's like, why?
I don't try to be, you know, I was trying, I guess, not make excuses for them, but try to be like, you know, sympathetic with their cause or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sometimes it's just like, dude, come on, man. Like, I mean, I saw a guy at a card shop one time that he had about shoulder-length hair that looked like a rubber wig because it hadn't been washed and it was all just greasy, stuck together. It looked like... It reminded me of Murderface from Metalocalypse. That's what his hair looks like because it hadn't been. It just was stuck in that position. I remember looking at him being like, please don't be my matchup. Please don't be my matchup.
And you get called against him.
Always. It's always that guy. Or, you know.
You're just like, fuck.
I brought my girlfriend now, I brought her to a Magic event. And that's probably the last time she'll ever go to a major Magic event.
It was like a PPTQ or something?
Yeah, she was just like, what? What is that? There was a guy that would... I mean, we passed by him, and he looked up and, like, noticed her and just wouldn't stop staring at her. So, you know, of course, we got to make fun of her about it. You know? Oh, hey, you know, so that guy's staring at you, and she's like, whatever, you know, it makes me feel nice, but, you know, just trying to be nice about this guy staring. And then it got...
It's also so fucking creepy,
but
too.
It got to the point where, like, it wasn't just staring. It was like, I could turn around and he'd just be there, you know? He was the best, like, butler that I never knew I had. Turn around and be like, oh, Jeeves, thank you. It's about time.
Yeah. Man. And, you know, when I've been to PPTQs and, sorry, IQs and like that, and you see... You know, people just acting like that, especially when you have women players and then you have the guy that's just drooling all over them. It's like, really?
Oh, yeah.
It's like they're just people, you know. It just, you know, she's not going to be your girlfriend. She's, you know, who cares if she's playing Magic? She's probably there just to win just as much as you. So just stop acting
she's not wearing the low cut shirt. Because she wants you to notice her. She's wearing the low-cut shirt because she wants you to be distracted by her.
And not only that, it's Florida. It's hot as fuck.
You're not doing anything that she wasn't expecting to begin with.
Yeah. And it's just... Oh, Yeah, those people drive me crazy. And it's also the ones, like I said before, the ones with hygiene problems. And it's like, I'll admit, I've gone up to Colossal right after I may have just worked out in the yard or worked out at the gym just to pick up some cards. And I probably smelled pretty bad, you know, but I wasn't there to stay. I was there just to pick up something and leave. But when you're, to me, it's always like, if I'm going somewhere and I know I'm going to be there for a while, just take a shower, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, present yourself decently.
Oh yeah. There's nothing worse than just walking into a card shop and just, oh, I'm just getting hit by a wall of like, it always smells, you know what, going into a, I've always made this joke where going, you can always tell like how good a card shop is by how much it smells like a karate dojo when you open up the door.
That's a perfect way of putting
you
it.
You walk in and it's like, oh man, God, you're like, I'm home. But yeah, it's...
And I've been to some stinky dojos before, because I don't know if, did I ever tell you that I used to be really into martial arts?
We got a conversation. I used to all of middle school and high school was in Aikido.
Oh yeah, that's right. We did talk about that. Yeah. See, I've never done Aikido. No. It was Judo, Taekwondo, and Kumdo is what I studied.
Judo, Aikido, and same thing, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, Judo was, I only did it for about a year. It was fun. I don't really remember much from it, but I enjoyed it. If I were to go back, because it's like, I'm not that into Taekwondo anymore, because I especially don't like what they're doing with the Olympic sport of it. It's just, they're ruining the sport, man. I stopped following it years ago. But you know, it's one, I don't even have time to do any kind of martial art anymore, let alone, you know, try to do magic and all that.
Yeah. I know the feels.
Yeah, man. Why did they say when you're growing up, like, one, I still don't know what I'm doing? Two, why do I never have time for anything?
Yeah.
They never told us that. It's kind of bullshit.
You know, it's weird because when you're going through school, you're like, man, I never have time to play video games. And then you have 3 months out of the year where you can do whatever you want to. You know, now...
I miss that so much.
3 months. There is no summer vacation.
Yeah, I'm lucky to get off a week. If
adulthood is a constant Jeez. Monday.
Wait,
adulthood
say that again?
Is a constant Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a feeling about Friday, though, where it's just like, oh my God, it's fucking Friday. And then one of my coworkers loves to say, oh, it's Friday. Yeah, just 2 days till Monday. And I'm just like, I want to kill you right now. It's like, why do you say that? You just completely put me in a bad mood. I mean, it's all in jest, but it's still like, motherfucker, yeah. Stop saying
it's that. It's almost as bad as someone's got a case of the Mondays.
Oh, God.
Someone's got a case if you're going to end up in my trunk. I mean...
You know what I've noticed? I don't know what it is, but lately, like the past few months, I don't mind Mondays, but for whatever reason, I dread Tuesdays. And it's not like there's a difference in my workload on the 2 days. It's just, I don't know. It's something like psychologically is going on where when Tuesday comes around, I'm just like, fuck everything.
See, we're at the age now where you've accepted the Monday. And
yeah,
your reward for accepting the Monday is Tuesday.
Oh, God. So is it going to take me another 10 years to accept the Tuesday where I start hating Wednesday? Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Fuck.
And see, it works out just perfectly because by the time we get old enough and we're, you know, in our 60s, we're going to hate the weekends because everything is busy on the weekends.
Oh, shit. Oh, when you put it like that, yeah. Fuck. Well, by the time I'm 60, I'm going to be like a millionaire and I'm going to be, you know, rocking the Pro Tour every year and be the 60-year-old, you know, just winning every Pro Tour, because I'm just that awesome at Magic. Hell, when I retire, it's like, fuck, I'll just go play Magic. I've told my wife, like, if we ever won the lotto or anything like that, I'm just going to start a Magic career.
Well, my thing is, you know, what you do is you find a product. You find a product that when people buy it, they're going to want to buy more of it continuously. I mean, it could be a white powdery product. It could be a green leafy product. You just sell it and buy it and sell it and buy it and sell it. And then you move to Venezuela with other people who sell that same product and buy it and sell it and buy it. And then you just play vintage the rest of your life after you retire from that.
Well, see, the only problem with that is you have a really high chance of getting caught. And not only that, but it's really hard to find vintage players, though. Especially if you're going to have legit vintage cards.
That's because all vintage players are Venezuelan drug lords.
Ah, so you need to move to Venezuela. Okay.
Or they're Europe. I don't know why it's always Europe. It's Europe and, like, South America is where you find all the vintage players.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's one thing that gets me a little miffed, I guess, where I wish I started playing Magic when it first came out. I think when it first came out, I was really into Pogs.
Yeah.
At the time. And thought, like, Pogs were going to be all the rage, and turns out to be bullshit.
Everyone's got these forever.
No. I don't even remember how to play that game at all. It was like you had the slammer or something, and you slam it down, and just, oh, I take all these Pogs from you now. It's like, wait, what?
I'm pretty sure it was kind of like a precursor to Pokemon. You just wanted to collect all these unique ones. You didn't really care how to play the game. You just wanted them. You just wanted the little pieces of cardboard that were under your milk cap. I mean...
Yeah. Oh, man. But it's like it made me wish I played back then, because I can remember when I got into Urza's Saga, they had that magazine that would list card prices, and I can still remember to this day Black Lotus being $300. Yep. And just like,
hell no, I'm not going to spend $300 on that card.
Yeah, hell no, I'm not going to spend $20,000 on that card.
Well, you know, it's as we've aged, its dollar amount has just always stayed astronomical to us. You know, in relative terms, you know, when you're 10, 11, 12, $300 is like, might as well be a billion. You know, same thing, you know, now we're in our, you know, late 20s, early 30s, and it's like, $20,000? I'll never see a bulk $20,000 ever. I'll never have $20,000 extra that I can go, yes, please give me that piece of cardboard.
Well, no, there's a way to do this, and I was talking with my friend about this. If you really want an alpha edition Black Lotus, I mean, if you really want to go for the peasant beta edition, because only peasants really get beta edition Black Lotus, but if you want the premium alpha edition, what you do, this is what you do. You either get a free money card from, like, the bank, or you get a free money loan, and you just sign up, you gotta promise to pay it back or something, and they'll just give you money.
I like it. I like this idea.
And I think it works, because it's sort of like how I bought my house. I told them I would pay it back, and they just gave me money to buy this house.
But did you have to give them a reason why you needed the money?
Because I need a house. Okay. Boom. Perfect.
I'd like to hear your reason right now why you need $20,000. Go.
I need a Black Lotus.
Sold, American.
But yeah, that's all you do. You get a free money loan. It's like, don't you ever go to like Lowe's or Home Depot or Best Buy and be like, hey, do you want a free money card?
I had one of those.
Like, yeah.
Keyword being had. I was not rambunctious. Yeah.
Oh, so was I. I remember getting a free money card from Best Buy. I think I had just gotten out of college, and I bought an iPod for like $600. And, oh yeah, I was a really smart kid. Still am, but, yeah. So, it's, you know, I'm looking at prices of Black Lotus right now on TCG Player. They've only got beta and unlimited, but beta right now is going, like, a moderately played beta is going for, lowest is $7,800. Which, you know, that's not too bad.
You know, we've really got a problem when we're sitting here going, you know, 7,800 isn't bad for a Black Lotus.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's always, I was actually thinking about this the other day about perceived value of just magic cards, because, you know, we have perceived value of a lot of things. Like, it's, when like just using magic as an example, like a Snapcaster Mage is a perfect example. It's what, 50, 60 bucks? I wouldn't have a problem paying 50, 60 bucks for a Snapcaster, but I have a problem paying $5 for, I don't know, a Goblin Rabble Master.
Right.
You know? Or it's just like, why, I'm not gonna pay $5 for that shit, but I'm more than willing to pay $60 for a card.
Oh.
And it's just, it's always amazing to me.
Star City has a near mint Alpha Black Lotus. It has what? One. It actually has a scan. You can see it. It's, I mean, this thing looks beautiful.
God, why did we not play this game back then?
$1,000. I mean, this thing. I'm not going to call this near mint. It's got roughing around the edges. I think they're just trying to milk. I mean, for being an alpha card, yeah, it's pretty decent, but I mean, there's scratches on it.
Yeah, I can see it.
I think they knock off about $19,990.
I completely agree. This is, you know, this looks fake to me. I think they should just give it to me for $10.
For prosperity, you know?
Yeah, because it's ridiculous. But it's funny what you were saying. It's like we look at something, be like, oh, only $7,800? Oh, that's not too bad. But we scoff at a card where it's like, what, that's $10? Fuck that card.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's just weird things. But, I mean, like, I think it's because we realize that if it's high price now, it's probably going to just increase. Whereas if it's five or $10 now, it's probably because it's playing it in standard, or it's played in a modern deck that's going to be banned soon, or, you know, it's a one of sideboard card for a legacy. You know, it's like it's $10 because one legacy deck that's doing really well right now plays one of it in the sideboard. And because Star City wants them.
Yep, and they will get it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that irks me with Star City. And I understand they're a business, they need to make money. But it's like, damn, they're always a lot more expensive than what you find on TCG Player or even Channel Fireball, too.
Well, I go through a Florida store called Cool Stuff.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I've bought some stuff from them. They're pretty
good. I like them because, I mean, I've been buying from them for years. So, I mean, I've got, like, a 15% discount on singles. So,
shit.
I mean, when I did this, I tell people, you know, hey, if you're going to buy stuff from Cool Stuff, use my account.
And this is not an ad whatsoever for them. But it could be, because I've actually tried to get in contact with Cool Stuff to say, hey, do you want to feature Magic Zubi? But I never got a reply back, but, you know.
No, well, you should try harder. We should go to Orlando and just go, hey.
Well, no, you know, that is true, that they are in Orlando. But I am featured now on legitmtg.com, so that's, you know, still good. It's they're a pretty cool site. I don't know if you ever, you know, this shameless plug, I don't know if you've checked them out, but they've got a lot of cool articles on it too. They're legit.
Sounds good to me.
But their singles are, they don't have, you know, as many singles as like Star City, but they have pretty good prices. It's like anything over $2 is free shipping, so that's I always love that, especially when, you know, you just need to buy like two cards and they come out to like $3. It's like, oh, now you got to pay $10, you know, an extra $3. Yeah, you're just like, motherfucker. Yeah, that's always annoying. But yeah, end of shameless plug. But yeah, man. There was something else I wanted to talk about EDH. So when did Wizards officially support EDH? Was it what the first Commander product, which came out what 5 years ago?
2012. I want to say is when it came out.
Yeah,
and those are, I'd say to date, probably the craziest, most overpowered generals they've ever made.
So were you involved with EDH a lot back then when they first came out?
Yes.
Was it more of a surprise when they first released it? Were you like, was the community happy about it, or?
I don't think. I mean, everyone was excited for it. I don't think. I mean, I had no idea what was going to happen. Those sets single-handedly made Commander sore. I mean, just crazy. I mean, just you had stuff like Animar. You know, Animar, up until recently, was like the teamer general to play. If you didn't play Animar, it was just... I mean, he's $25 now. I remember getting Animars for like $1 when he first came out. And it's because they're so in such high demand. You know, Damia, my old general, was from that set. You know, the Mimeoplasm. They were just... It was the first time that Commander players had legendary creatures specifically designed for the game of Commander. And they were bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. And every year that they make a new Commander set, they just raise up the bonkersness of them.
Yeah, like the past year with the experience counters, which I still need to buy all five Commander decks, because I've been slacking on it bad. I've been focusing too much on Modern and Standard. But I will buy them eventually. And even like the game mechanic of experience counters, that was really cool to do.
Oh yeah, and it's one of those things where experience counters stay on you. It's just like having an infect counter or a poison counter.
Yeah.
So what it does is it makes your general legitimate no matter how much mana it costs to bring them out. Because you'll always have those counters, which means that your general's ability will always be that pumped up to where it becomes, you know, I have to spend 10 mana to play Marin. It doesn't matter because I'm grabbing Vorinclex or Ulamog Ceaseless Hunger out of my graveyard for free, putting it into play. For 10 mana, I'm essentially casting it out of my graveyard.
That's insane.
So, it's just... And that's what was cool. However, this one... And this is all rumor and speculation. But, I mean, I buy into rumor and speculation. This was one of the first Commander sets where... As spoilers were happening, research and development were changing and re-errata in cards.
Like older cards, you mean, or the commander
commanders
cards
that were coming out? They were changing them as they're, like, you know, the day after one was spoiled, it was, oh crap, you know, that's really strong. We probably shouldn't have done that. Let's try this. Which is why we have two commanders in the set that are kind of like lame ducks. Kalemni, which was the Boros commander, says whenever you cast a creature with, I think it's power, it's either power or mana cost 5, you get an experience counter. And she is a vigilant double strikey 3/3 that gets +1/+1 for every experience counter you have. Rumor has it her original experience point getter, I guess you could say, was every time you equip Kalemni with an equipment, you get an experience counter.
Oh shit.
And then she gets it was something along the lines of if you have 4 experience counters or 2 experience counters, she has first strike. If you have 4, she has vigilance. If you have 6, she has double strike. If you have 8, she has flying. If you have 10, she has lifelink.
Wow.
You know, things like that. So it was kind of cool because you could start, you could run equipments that didn't give her that naturally. But also it meant that if someone were like, okay, listen, I'm going to destroy her and all the equipment attached to her, you could just cast her again, and she would already have those abilities locked in.
That doesn't sound broken.
The problem was people were finding ways to cast her on turn two with every equipment possible, you know, going on to her for free. And I'm going, well, okay. Turn two, I've got a 3-3 that does yes. And I think from like from 12 on, I think she gained indestructible something. Or, you know, hexproof was thrown in there. She just exponentially became stronger and stronger and stronger, which, I mean, Boros kind of needs it. Boros commander is like grating, using a cheese grater to shave. It's just a terrible experience. So, I mean, they actually needed this. And I guess that's, I think that's where R&D was going, was we need to make this really strong Boros commander, but not that strong. So that's why she seems really kind of vanilla, is her ability was so broken that they had to scale it back a bit. And instead of scaling it back a little bit, they went, like, full steamrolled it back into oblivion. Same thing with Arjun. Arjun's original text, and I remember seeing this before it was fixed, was whenever you cast a blue spell, you can pay a red to do 3 damage to a creature or player.
What the
whenever
fuck?
You play a red spell, you get to pay a blue to draw a card. That's the commander of my dreams, man.
Oh god, that just, it just screams broken.
It screams. Is it though? That was why.
It does.
I mean, you play, you know, oh, I'm going to mind swipe you for 3. You're going to take 6 damage because I'm going to pay the extra 2, and then I'm going to draw a card.
Hey, man.
Grabs. Oh, hey.
Hey. Hey. Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. I don't know if my hard drive didn't get full or something, and maybe my computer just needed to be rebooted because it just stopped recording. So, yeah, we had some technical difficulties because my computer is dumb. And even though I work on computers for a living, I don't know how to, you know, fix them or anything. I just use the good old magical tool called Google. But, yeah, before we got cut off, you were just talking about Arjun. And what his changes were, or what he originally was, where... I forget. Can you say it again?
Originally, he was an Izzet general that when you cast a blue spell, you could pay 1 red mana to do 3 damage to someone or something. And if you played a red spell and paid a blue mana, you got to draw a card. And it was bonkers the amount of things you could do with this general. But he was then changed into a worse mind moil, which is essentially when he basically says whenever you play a spell, count the cards in your hand, put them at the bottom of your deck, and then draw that many cards. So, I mean, it's cool because you're always getting a new hand, but not nearly as cool as the lightning bolting stuff while you brainstorm. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, that's sick. Yeah, it's kind of sad that they did that. Has that been one of the first times they've done that, where they had to go back?
One of the first noticeable times. I believe they had to do work on Ruhan at one point. Ruhan, he is the one of the original commanders from the commander set back in 2012. He's a 4-drop 7/7, and that's it. But his, I guess you could say, ability... is every turn he has to attack, and he attacks someone at random. Which is kind of a cool thing. I mean, it's... But he used to have vigilance, I believe, so that you didn't have to sit there and waste an attacker. But, I mean, that just made him too strong, because you had this... Basically, it was, at the beginning of your combat step, do 7 damage to somebody, and then, you know, you still had this... 7/7 blocker on that you could get out in turn 2 if you wanted to. It was pretty crazy. It was a really fun general.
Well, at least you just give him vigilance, and that way he doesn't tap.
Yeah, I mean, you can build Ruhan a million different ways. The man who made EDH, Sheldon Menery, has a Ruhan deck that is pretty much a you-did-this-to-yourself deck, and it is hilarious to see in action. It is, oh, you just drew a bunch of cards? Guess what? Here's like 15... It's kind of like, I guess you could call it like anti-douche stacks. Where like, I mean, if I was playing Kami against it, I would just die outright. I mean, because it's like, oh, you drew five cards? Guess what? Now you have to, you know, sacrifice this many creatures and do this. And I mean, just the way it's built to keep the interest of fairness alive. So if you do decide, oh, I'm going to draw 15 cards, and you lose the 15, 20 life that you have to lose to draw those cards, you did it to yourself. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just... So he does that for like the first five or six turns, and then Ruhan drops, and he'll put, I mean, because Ruhan is Jeskai, so he's red, white, blue. He'll drop Steel of the Godhead on him, which gives him +2/+2 unblockable and lifelink.
Yeah.
So you've got this 9/9 general just nothing anyone can do about it except sit there and just pray to God they don't, you know, their number doesn't get rolled.
Jeez.
But I mean, I've played him too. I played him super Voltron-y. Just Voltron, he was the only creature in the deck, and the rest of the cards were control. It's kind of like a, I guess, a little Emery archetype. I call it Control-tron, where it's just the nastiest, meanest control deck you can think of with a big creature as a finisher. Kind of, I did the same thing with like Thraxamundar. Thraxamundar is creature kill with a Voltron commander, essentially. And then the rest of the deck was just nothing but kill spells, counter spells, and tutors.
Yeah, when people say like Voltron or Stax, what do they mean by that? Because I hear that a lot in EDH.
Well, there's many different archetypes for EDH, just like there's many different archetypes for, I mean, any deck. A really popular one for EDH is called Voltron. Because you have a general that you have access to whenever you have the mana for him, and it only takes 21 general damage to kill somebody, you can use that to your advantage and go, okay, well, I'm just going to build this deck geared toward bringing out my general, putting a ton of equipments and enchantments on him, just suit him up, kind of like Voltron, all coming together to make one big monster, you know, one big robot, and then swinging, and just getting that 21 general damage. Usually when you're doing Voltron, you want what's called you're on a clock. Three turn clock is kind of like the spot to be in. Of course, anything slower, you risk your general getting killed because of board wipes or what have you. Anything faster, your general's going to get killed because any general that can kill someone in two swings is going to die before that second swing. I mean, unless you're playing, like, you know, three people running colorless EDH decks, it's going to die.
Oh, jeez.
But, I mean, you have your unorthodox Voltron generals. You have your very popular ones. Rafika the Many is very popular because he gives himself double strike. He gives himself +1/+1. He's a four drop that technically swings for eight. And he's in great colors. He's in blue, white, and green, which Bant is one of my all-time favorite color shards. It's got everything you need for it. of course, in the same token, you've got green-white, so you've got Sigarda, who is hands down, I mean, and I will clobber whoever disagrees with me, the best EDH Voltron general of all time. That's fair. I mean, she's the fairest best. She's 5-drop, 5/5, in two really good colors, green-white. She has flying, so she's evasive. She has hexproof, so she's even more evasive, and she can't be sacrificed, which is, like, super evasive.
Oh, yeah.
And she's in colors for Shield of the Oversoul, which gives her +2/+2 flying and indestructible, which is pretty much, you know, she already has flying, but why not give her double flying? I think the only thing that's better than Sigarda, but isn't as fair, would be something like Ural. Ural's in Naya colors. He's a 5-drop beast. You pop an enchantment on him. For every enchantment he has on him, he gets +2/+2. So Roncor turns him into, I'm going to swing at you twice and kill you. And then you have Xur, who is just the ultimate Voltron general. I mean, he's an Esper, black, white, blue, super good control colors. He fetches his own equipments and enchantments when he attacks. Well, not equipments, but his enchantments. I mean, and then it's just, it's one of those things where once he, all it takes is one attack from Xur to lose the game.
Wow. Yeah, I've never seen a Xur deck, but I'm just looking up his card right now. That's pretty crazy.
Oh, it's scary, because, I mean, they're usually really fine-tuned, so you're getting Xur out on turn two with haste. You attack, and you attach, like, diplomatic immunity to him. So he has Shroud, and it has Shroud. Now, because of the way Xur works, you're not targeting with anything you put onto the field, so he gets past other creature's Shroud and his own Shroud. So if you've got a problematic, if you've got a Blightsteel and someone gives it Shroud and you are screwed, you go, that's cool, I'm going to attack someone else with Xur to kill them off, let's say. And you go, O-Ring, it's 3 mana. It's going to go on top of your Shroudy guy over there. Captain Shiny Sides is exiled.
Oh, jeez.
He is. I mean, he's really fun to play. Unfortunately, he's just every ounce of degenerate. He's only got about a jillion different combos with him. He's got soft locks, hard locks, dreadlocks. I mean, everything. just stupidly strong. I had the pleasure of playing against it and never wanting to play Magic in any format ever again. And then I had the pleasure of actually playing it. And it's just, it's awesome. It really is. I recommend anyone that wants to try it. I mean, at least go on Tapped Out or a site that lets you kind of play test decks and just see how it works. See all the crazy things you can do with it. But like I said, I mean, in the interest of fun, I took it apart after like a week because no one was having fun with it. And you kind of lose fun with it because you do the same 10 steps every single game.
Yeah.
So you're not really playing the game as much as you are just memorizing steps to something. It's kind of like memorizing a dance. It feels more like that than actually playing Magic.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. And it's like you said it perfectly, memorizing a dance. The deck is just one purpose. It's get the commander out and then just start playing good stuff.
Right. You have decks. Voltron decks are usually very commander-centric. They've got support cards. I mean, when I built Rafik, I had things in there that, you know, for every equipment on them, this would happen. So if he wasn't on the field or he wasn't, you know, able to do anything, I still had a decent creature list that would get not better advantages from using the stuff that I could throw on him, but advantages nonetheless. One of my favorite things to do was, and everyone laughed at me when I played him the first time, I played Metamai, what is his name? Metamai, the Ageless. He's the,
how do you spell that?
Medomai.
Oh, Metamai, okay.
Yeah. He's kind of cool. I would never build him as a general because, I mean, he can't attack on his own special turns, like, but I mean, that's, I understand why. He would just go infinite. But what a lot of people realize is I played my Metamai, and then the next turn I played Rafik, and everyone's like, well, too bad Rafik, I mean, didn't have boots or anything to give him haste, and everyone kind of laughed at me, like, you know, you cast your general, I had one turn left to live, because, I mean, we're talking now, I was at 3 health, maybe. And they're like, and all you're going to do is, you know, you cast your general for what? There's no reason. If you read Rafik, he gives, as long as he's exalted, so his exalted ability is whenever a creature attacks by itself, it gets double strike.
Yep.
So Metamai takes an extra turn on damage. So I got to take 2 extra turns with Metamai, which sealed.
Oh, shit.
So it's you know, and it's stuff like that. It's the little things when you're playing EDH where you're like, people sat there and went, same reaction you just had. Oh, shit, you know.
That's awesome.
Yep. Or, you know, I had one game where at Psalm Simulacrum was Sword of Fire and Ice. Everyone's laughing because I strapped a, you know, Solemn. But what they didn't realize is I had 2 creatures that had Exalted, a land with Exalted, an artifact, or an enchantment with Exalted, and my general on the field. He swung for, like, 16. And then burned somebody for an extra, like, 4 damage. And then I drew 2 cards, and people just sat there like, you know what? We're done. You win. Nothing we can do about that.
Oh, jeez. That's just... Wow. See, and hearing stories like that, that's just... I love it. It... EDH, like we've said before, it gets down to... Like you said, it's a sandbox for Magic, but it's also... God, it's almost like a... It's like a candy shop. Like, ooh, you know, I'm going to have some Snickers with M&Ms and, you know, whatever, like a kid's candy shop. Like, I'm going to infinite combo with this deck, and this deck, I'm just going to kill you in 2 turns, and just the amount of craziness you can do. I love it.
Oh, yeah. EDH has always been, it's controlled chaos. I mean, and the stupid things, and I mean, something I've realized too is, I mean, I had a brief stint, I believe you were there, I came back to Standard for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you start seeing things. Now, I was playing someone's deck. I had no idea what was Standard. I was playing our mutual friend George's deck that he made for his son. And through playing EDH and through playing, you know, things like Legacy, it helps you see interactions between cards you wouldn't normally see. And that is, hands down, what won me the game. As you sit there, as if you're an EDH player long enough, you know, you see things in a whole different light. You don't sit there and go, all right, well, this is pretty cool. It says if I have 2 of these out, then they get +4/+4. All right, that's kind of cool. Or for every 1 that I have out, I have +4/+4. You'll have a lot of Standard players, a lot of Legacy players, or Modern players go, you know, you can probably have like 2 or 3 out. That'd be pretty cool. An EDH player will go, yeah. But is +4/+4 really that good when I'm already making a billion of them? You know, it's that, oh, I found a way to make this even better. I found a way to make this even better. You know, Metamai the Ageless. I'll just give him double strike, you know. Ojutai. You know, I'll give him vigilance and double strike. And I'll, you know, essentially scry 6.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy stuff like that. You know, Rafik of the Many, putting swords on him says you win the game. You've won, and if anyone tries to beat you, you throw Rafik at them and watch them as they cry. It's just what happens. You know, it's even your general, who almost was the group hug general that Kami turned into, was Krufix. A lot of people didn't realize Krufix's mana storage works with the Eldrazi that require wastes.
Yeah.
So you've got things, you know, like that. Now you've got Krufix decks where Eldrazis are coming out turn 5, turn 6, and not just like 1 or 2 Eldrazis. We're talking like, I've dropped all 15 of these cards in my hand, and I'm not going to apologize. I refuse. So
yeah, he definitely can be degenerate.
Oh yeah, but he's great too. I mean, like, I had a whole big plan for him being group hug. You know, have Kami in there, have all the special things. And his mana storage is so good that you can sit there and go, turn four, I'm going to cast Prosperity for five, and everyone's like, yay, we're drawing five cards. You know, turn seven or eight rolls by, and you're like, hey guys, I'm going to cast Prosperity for 370. Everyone's like, oh, you're an asshole.
Oh, that's funny.
But that's another thing I like too, is, you know, you've got a lot of people, you can type in on, I'll do it right now. I'll go to Google, and you type in Krufix. I guarantee you have, if there's 20 decks, 17 of them will be unique. You know, and this is one of the things. That's what makes a really good EDH commander, in my opinion. I mean, because you have some that they pigeonhole you into certain things. You have to play it this way. It's this way or no way kind of thing. So. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. I'm just kind of doing it live. I forgot what the question was.
I don't even remember the question either. But
we were talking about what Stax and what Voltron mean.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we went over Voltron. Now what's Stax? I hear that a lot.
Stax it's actually a legacy deck. It is response to combo essentially. And the key card to a Stax style deck is the card Smokestax. It is an artifact. I believe it's 4 mana. Every upkeep, you put a soot counter on it. And everyone has to sacrifice a permanent for every soot counter on Smokestax.
Oh, jeez.
Now, because of the way Magic works is say I've played this, my next upkeep, I pick how both of these abilities resolve. So what I do is I say, okay, I have 0 soot counters on it. I am going to sacrifice nothing. I am then going to put a soot counter on it. So everyone for that turn has sacrificed something. And then it comes to your turn and you go, I'm going to sacrifice one thing. Then I'm going to put a soot counter on it. So everyone is always getting rid of more than you are. And that's basically what the rest of the deck is. Is it's tons of things that have, you know, when a creature enters the battlefield, you have to sacrifice a land. When, whenever you play a spell, if it shares, you know, you can only play a spell if it shares a different color than the spell cast before it. It makes it almost impossible for anyone to do anything. Except you run cards in there that say, you know, when so-and-so sacrifices something, you draw 2 cards. You know, it's just, so you're getting ridiculous advantage out of their disadvantage, and you're 2-for-1-ing everything. And one of my favorite all-time characters in Magic the Gathering is the best Stax commander you could ever play, but she's stupidly banned, and it makes me upset. And it's Braids Cabal Minion, who, if you've ever seen Blue Braids, the one I used to play, she's the exact opposite. Instead of every player getting a artifact, land, or creature on their upkeep for free out of their hands, she makes you sacrifice one of them on your upkeep. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I can see why she's banned. Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, she's mono black, so it's, you know, turn one, you know, land. We'll be realistic here. We'll say, like, land and then some kind of 0-cost mana rock. Drop Bitter Blossom. I mean, that's, like, the perfect hand you could have for her. Because turn 3, turn 4, you know, well, turn 2, I'm going to cast Dark Ritual and cast Braids. You've won the game. Because you'll always have more fodder than anyone else to sacrifice. So they'll be having to sacrifice lands and you're still sitting there sacrificing your fairy token from Bitter Blossom. Someone at the shop tried to build Mogus stacks, and Mogus is actually really good for stacks. The god from Journey, for whatever it's called.
Journey into Nyx.
Journey into Nyx, there we go. His ability is kind of like...
Oh, he was actually born of the gods.
I mean, his ability itself... Oh, well, you know, six of one, half dozen.
But, you know, there's going to be someone on the podcast who's going to email me and be like, actually, at minute 50... of when in your previous episode, Mogus was incorrectly stated as Journey into Nyx when he's actually born of the gods.
Oh, he's very born of the gods. So his ability is the perfect example of stacks. You're either going to take two damage or you're going to sacrifice a creature. That doesn't sound, especially in EDH where you've got decks that can spit out 30 creatures.
Yeah.
Your life total starts at 40. Doesn't sound like it's that big of a deal. But when you play Mogus correctly, I mean, and I, in no way, I've had to play against a Mogus like this, and I'm competitive and thought it was the worst experience of my life. He's very land destruction based, and he's just, everyone sacrifices everything. Everyone sacrifices everything. The goal is to keep only Mogus on the battlefield. Every other permanent is gone. So that you're having to take that two damage every turn.
Oh, jeez.
So 20 turns essentially later. I mean, they'll throw a couple of burn spells in there, but that's really all it is I'm going to play my land and maybe a creature for turn, and then on their turn, blow it up.
That's just nasty.
Yeah. And then, I mean, stacks also comes in, I mean, many varieties. You have enchantment stacks, you have artifact stacks, and you have one of my favorite stacks decks ever, which is Zergo Helm Smasher. He is what I jokingly call Board Wipe Tribal. He's indestructible on your turn, so he is actually kind of the best of both Voltron and stacks, because you are constantly making it so no one else has anything. I mean, the perfect game for Zergo is turn 3 Zergo, turn 4 Jocklehops. I mean, because he survives, and you just sit there and dome people for 7 constantly after that. So you've got that. He's a 3-turn clock. You could put an enchantment on him, or, you know, equipment. There's really no need to, but you could. And he's stacks because, I mean, it's just wave after wave after wave of just nonstop destruction. And it's a very special kind of stacks. It's just, I mean... playing it was the most satisfyingly evil I've ever felt in my life. I was playing against my buddy who I actually gave the deck to. He liked it so much, that was his birthday gift 1 year. It was, here, man, you like this so much, here's Zergo. I was playing him and my girlfriend, and both of them looked at me and were like, "You will never see us again if we ever see this deck again."
Wow.
It was really brutal, but really kind of fun to play in a mean, sadistic kind of way.
Like I said, you're definitely a masochist, and it's you thrive on people's pain, but hey, it's hilarious, though.
I mean, sometimes I don't even do it, like, intentionally. I mean, there's a lot of, and I've seen this from a lot of other players too, is you sit there with the best intentions of having a fun game.
Oh, yeah.
And then you look at everyone's faces, and they're just peering into your soul, hoping that they can just mentally break you out in flames, you know? I had what I thought was actually a really funny deck, because it was two colors that I'd never played together in EDH, and it was a general that no one had heard of.
Which one?
His name is Throwmok the Insatiable.
Throwmok the Insatiable. I'm looking him up. Devour X, where X is the number of creatures devoured this way.
Yep.
It's creatures with X, 1/1 counters for each of those. Okay, go on.
So, I figured I would build him I would throw Mage Blade in, which says whenever equipped creature attacks, defending player takes damage equal to attacking creature's power. So before it even does attack damage, it's like, I could do like 15 damage to you. Haha, that's pretty cool, right? Yeah. I also had stuff like Fling and like Chandra's Ignition, things that just would sacrifice him or make him do damage equal to his power to everybody. You know, things like, I had Greater Good, because I was like, I'll be able to draw like 10 cards off of him. The first game I ever played with him, it was turn 4, and he was like 175. I mean,
only?
Yeah, and I was like, okay, well, that's my general. Next turn, I draw into Chandra's Ignition, and it's like, well, I win. Sorry. I mean, and it was 4 games in a row of that, where it was just, oh, guys, it's like turn 5. He's a 200-200 right now. How? I don't know, guys. It just, this is how it happens, okay?
This is how Magic is played, all right? You guys are playing it wrong.
Emery, what are you doing over there? I'm making babies. I mean, I don't know, I had every intention. This was actually supposed to be my deck to play casually.
Yeah.
And I've got people sitting there like, listen, I'll pay you never to bring that to the shop, you know? But I mean, so, and eventually it turned into Shatter Gang Brothers, which I actually, someone at the shop, I've never seen him since, but he messages me on Tapped Out every now and then to let me know how the deck is working. I brought Shatter Gang Brothers to the shop, because after Throwmock became Shatter Gang, because I was mad, because it's like, this guy's as casual can be, let me show you stacks. And Shatter Gang, I mean, they're the master of stacks. They are like the proprietors of Haterade. Everyone hates Shatter Gang. Some kid, never seen him before, decided to sit down and play with me. I walked out when I was done to go walk outside and talk to people, because I just won the game, and it was like an hour and a half long game. It was miserable for everybody but me. He walked up with $100 bill and was like, I would like to buy the rights to be able to play that deck the way you have it built. And I was like, do you want the actual cards? He goes, no, I just want the rights to it. And I was like, well, man, it's free. And he was like, no. He goes, the deal is you can never play it again, but I want to be able to say that I built it. Okay, cool. Sure, man. Yeah. I mean, $100. Why wouldn't I? And as far as I know, he is almost undefeated with that deck.
Wow. Was it a pretty expensive deck to build the way you built it? Or,
you know, what's funny about stacks is there's maybe, like, most stacks cards are in a $2 to $3 range.
Yeah.
Except for, like, you know, so you go from, like, a $2 or $3 card, and there's, we'll say, 60 of those you need. But then there's, like, 10, $500, $600 cards you need for it, because they were printed in, like, Legends.
All the good cards.
So, it just depends on how deep you want to go into the stacks. I personally didn't get them because they were cards that, for one more mana, did the same exact thing. And it's kind of like, it's EDH. I can wait the extra turn for stacks. You know,
yeah.
They're not going anywhere. But yeah, I mean, he didn't buy any card off me. He bought the idea for me, essentially.
Ah, okay.
Which was a really weird... I mean, everyone kind of looked at him like, really? Shut up, guys.
Yeah. So he didn't buy the deck, he just bought the quote-unquote rights?
Yes, he bought the idea.
Okay.
So it's kind of like if you went on like my Tapped Out account and were like, listen, I want to play... You know, I'm buying the idea of Sidri off of you. You know, you wouldn't be able to afford it because it's my baby, but...
Yeah. Okay. At first I thought you just sold the deck, but if he's just buying the rights, I'm just like, okay,
yeah,
sure.
And that's the thing, is everyone outside was like, dude, are you sure you want to do that? And I was sitting like, shut up, man. I'm trying to make $100.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. That's funny.
Yeah.
There's been one commander I've been wanting to build, and every time I mention it to Skid, he always like he tells me to like basically go kill myself. And it's Aisha Tanaka. I want to build a banding deck.
Oh, like you just called me a masochist. You know they had to reword like 90% of banding, right? Like it was supposed to have been gone away, and they're like, "Well, we're gonna keep like two or three things from the original banding."
Well, what did they keep over? Because I mean, I know how it originally was played, but I'm not sure how it's played now.
It's if what I was told correctly is you they attack, they do damage as one. Oh, here, you know what? It's like playing the old Odric. You decide how everything is attacked and blocked. You can actually, you can essentially use your creatures that are attacking to kill other creatures if you want to. Or just have them unblocked. I think. Skid tried to explain it to me, and I remember not really understanding banding back in the day. And I just, as I hear the word banding, and my brain goes, nope, nope, mm-mm, nope, not doing it.
Yeah, I can see why. It was probably one of the most convoluted mechanics in the game, and that's kind of why I want to build it, just to have everybody hate me.
I would rather play High Tide in Legacy without a calculator than play banding.
So, banding, so I should make a banding deck for Legacy, and just... Maybe that's how I can win Legacy games. People just see you're playing banding. All right, scoop, you win.
Well, it's okay. I had a buddy that he built an EDH deck that was words tribal. Everything on the card, like the rules text for like whatever card it was so long and hard to understand that people just gave up in frustration. And they're all old cards, so it wouldn't be like at the beginning of your turn do this. It would be like, you know, at the start of the post blah 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 phase of this and that, before you draw your card, but after your untap. So I mean, it was, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember
old,
those
old wording cards, you know. And then of course he had it was black was in the deck, so he had Chains of Mephistopheles on there, which is like the only card in Magic that you actually need a flowchart to understand. And he'd sit there and try to explain it to people, and you'd see the look on their face, and they would just do like that weird, like, I'm in disgust head shake, and then pick up their cards and walk away. He never lost, but he never won. People just left the game.
So technically he won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Illegal actions. Illegal actions.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of my favorite old cards that the text is just unnecessarily long is Cocoon from, what is it, Legends? Where it's tap target creature you control and put 3 charge counters on Cocoon. If there are any charge counters on Cocoon, that creature does not untap during your untap phase. During your upkeep, remove 1 charge counter. During the upkeep after the one in which the last charge counter was removed, put a 1/1 counter on the creature gains flying and bury Cocoon. Just like, holy fuck, that's a lot of words.
What did you just call me?
And another one of my favorite ones that is just unnecessarily wrong or long is Nameless Race.
Oh, yeah.
It's yeah. God, what is it? Star Life? I guess Star being whatever the...
If I remember right, I mean, it's an old From the Dark card.
Yeah.
And it's like... Pay, it's before X.
Oh yeah, that's right, that's right.
So it's like effects, like, okay, when it comes to like you pay X life to play it, or when it comes into play,
pay X life, yeah. When yeah, bringing it into play,
and it's like it can't be higher and the total number of white cards all opponents have in play, and then their graveyard.
It's so specific.
And then it turns into a creature that's life total becomes the life paid. Or its power and toughness becomes the life paid. And it's just... Yeah, it's his deck had stuff like this in it, and it was just bonkers. So.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But,
Yeah, man, so... I guess let's get into some non-magic stuff. So, we talked about you getting done with EMT. What else has been going on? Has it just mainly been school and work and all this other stuff?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, just school and work. Mostly school, though. I do have to let you go, though.
All right. We'll briefly end it here. So we are back. And it seemed like you had a fun time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic.
But, oh, shit, what were we talking about? I already forgot. God, my memory sucks.
I don't know. I think how we were going to shamelessly plug how I built the best Sidri deck that was ever built. Cough, cough. Wink, wink.
Oh, that's right. So what makes it the best? Have you taken that to a lot of competitive events or?
Yes. It's one of those, it's another on paper, it's terrible. In action, it's actually really good. When I first went to Colossal, it was a deck that I brought with me. And I figured everyone was as competitive as my last shop. And that's the first day I ever met Skid. And he was like, I don't ever want to see that again. No one is going to like you. And yeah. No, what we're actually going to talk about is you said you want to start talking about stuff that was outside of the Magic community.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Shit. Oh. That's right. This is sort of related to Magic, because there's a Grand Prix happening in North Carolina in Charlotte. And one of the big things, I just had a guest, Emma Handy. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Mm-mm.
She's a Star City Games Pro grinder. You know, has made a bunch of top 16s, some top 8s.
Right.
And opens and invitationals and all that, and some classics. And I was talking with her last night. At the time of this recording, but by the time this comes out, it'd be talked to her a week ago. So, and one thing, you know, we were starting to talk about was the bathroom law that's going on. And I guess I just wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
Wait, I'm sorry, what was it again?
The bathroom law that's like being blown up about mainstream media about, oh, you know, how transgenders are, you know, can't go to the bathroom, you know, whether they, you know, have become trans women or trans men.
Oh yeah. I don't care where you poop.
That's the best thing I've heard.
I mean, I do to an extent. Don't poop on me. I mean, that's my thing. I mean, the way I see it is, you know, it's the same way people will talk about how gun control, you know, saying this is a gun-free zone isn't going to stop people from bringing a gun there. Saying that this is a, you know, trans-free zone isn't going to stop. Or, you know, basically putting up a sign that says women's only is not going to stop someone that's really desperate from going in there and trying to see and fondle women. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
So I don't see a point in the argument. It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, they've been going into the same bathrooms for years. Who cares? Everyone's there for one reason. I mean, I'm there for two reasons, but you know,
number one and number two.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Sometimes the number three, which the infamous number three. But yeah, I guess to try to play devil's advocate, I listen to, you know, some. I like to hear both sides of the argument, and a lot of the people that are against it are basically saying that, oh, well, so if you know, people who have, you know, made the transition from a man to a woman or a woman to a man, or what they claim they self-identify as a man or woman, you could just basically, you and I can basically say, well, I now self-identify as a woman. I'm going to go to the woman's restroom now. And then they're basically stating that, oh, a bunch of child molesters are going to do that and go molest your kid in the bathroom.
I mean, in fairness, a child molester could go into a bathroom and molest your kid without saying that he was, you know, without saying I identify as a woman. I feel like this is one extra step that a child molester is probably not even thinking about.
I know. But it's that kind of mindset that just, one, boggles my mind. And like I said, I'm trying to understand the other side of the argument, the people that are against it, but I just, to me, it's just such a non-issue.
I think what it is, I mean, because when I first heard this issue, I'm not going to lie, I mean, you know, I don't care if, you know, humping sheep is your thing. If you're a cool person, you're a cool person, you know, it's, I've always been like that. But like, when I heard that they're, you know, basically just open bathrooms, the first thing I went to was, oh God, a woman might see my pee-pee. And then I realized that if a woman really wanted to see it, she would just, hey, let me see it. I mean, so it was one of those things where it's like, I can see, I feel like people got like scared and like tensed about it. Everyone did initially. They're like, oh God, no, yeah. I don't like that. And then you had the people that were like, well, I mean, it's going to happen regardless of what we do, you know. Okay, who cares? And then you had those people that still just stayed tense about it. And it's like you can't get it through their head that it's already happening now.
Yeah.
You know, there's not like some... And it's really kind of like, I think, more of like a smear campaign that they used like back in the late 80s and early 90s where, you know, if a man's gay, he's going straight for your kids. If a woman's gay, she's going straight for your kids, you know?
Yeah, I remember those.
You know, it's, you can't have a gay teacher because she's going to touch your, you know, daughter, or he's going to touch your son kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's that old, like, late 80s, early 90s propaganda that is still stuck and, like, alive in people today. And it's just, it's like, why, you know?
Yeah, you made a good point that it's happening now, and there's why is it all of a sudden an issue now? And I understand it's election season, you know, and when I was talking with Emma, she made a really good point that, you know, now that gay marriage is a non-issue, you know, now that gay marriage is legal across the states, they need something else to, you know, get all hoity-toity about and get all pissed off, you know?
Right.
So...
There's always issues, and I almost feel, and I hate to get all, like, you know, conspiracy theory about it, but boils down to, it's easier to conquer a divided people than a unified people. And it almost feels we have so much stuff right now, so many, like, categories we have to put ourselves into, that it's amazing that we have the same or shared ideas with anybody else when you think about it. Because, I mean... You and I are almost middle-aged white nerds, but according to, like, government standards and according to social standards, you and I couldn't be any further apart, even though, I mean, we're friends, we hang out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's just, it feels like the more we can be divided, the easier it is to convey what message they want. They can sit there and say, you know, you want to vote for me because I do this and because you like this. It's almost like politicians are kind of like Amazon. You know, you ordered free speech for everybody. You might also like same-sex bathrooms. I mean,
Yeah, and it's like I said, I it feels like I'm banging my head against the wall when I hear all this stuff on news, and it's, you know, and the conspiracy nut in me is also basically saying, you know, what kind of bills are they trying to pass right now that they're not talking about that's just going to fuck our freedom even more while everybody's focused on this bathroom issue?
Yeah.
Because, you know, or what next 9/11 thing is going to happen, you know, to put right, your tinfoil hat on, you know, something's happening at Area 51 and there's chemtrails and we've got the documents to prove it and all that stuff.
Yeah, or, you know, it could even be something simple like, what did some senator, you know, who did some senator kill and shove into his, you know, trunk?
Or shove in front of a train, and then he became vice president and then became president, and his wife left him, and then she came back and became his vice president. That sounds like a plot of a TV show I've seen.
Yeah.
Have you seen that at all, House of Cards?
You were... Everyone brings it up. Everyone tells me to watch it. I like watching really lighthearted TV.
Oh, okay.
I don't do anything serious. I figure, you know, working at the hospital, everything's serious, you know, future job, everything's going to be pretty serious. I like to kind of, if I'm watching a movie, it's going to be a comedy. Or a musical, because musicals.
Oh, I love musicals, man. I think that my favorite musical that I've seen live was Cats and Lion King. Those were probably my two favorites that I've seen.
Yeah, I just saw Lion King. I mean, I've seen Lion King before, but I saw it just this past year at the Stratus Center. It was pretty good. Pretty good.
Dude, I
just
find
I remember it.
Yeah, I find it better than the movie, the cartoon. It's just that good. I really want to see the Book of Mormon, though.
Oh, the one from... whatchamacallit, the guys at South Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just looks hilarious. Probably another good musical that I've seen was Les Mis. That was good live, if you ever have a chance to see that live.
I've seen it multiple times live, actually. So my family's...
Oh, nice.
My family's favorite musical. You know, it couldn't be, like, Grease or something. No, it had to be Les Mis.
Yeah, and... The movie that came out a couple years ago, it wasn't a bad adaptation. I enjoyed it.
Oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah, man. Shit. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because one Grand Prix Charlotte's happening there, and you know, and there was a whole hubbub in the Magic community that, you know, what's the convention center going to be like? Because there are, you know, trans people in, you know, Magic, and there are some pro players that are trans, and it's, you know, it was a concern. And to me, it's just, it frustrates me because it's like, why? You know, it's,
yeah.
It's like, why are we focusing our energy on this? You know, and I don't mean, I don't know, man. You probably know what I mean. It's just, it's like, there's so many other important things to be working on, like healthcare and getting rid of Obamacare. Oh, that just opens up a can of worms. I won't get into that.
But you make a good point. You know, it's kind of like, why focus on such a trivial issue when there's, and maybe that's what this is supposed to do, is stop people from focusing on the facts. You know, stop focusing on the question of what they're going to do with Obamacare.
Yeah.
You know, stop focusing on why is America number six in poverty, number one in incarcerated persons per, you know, per household per. I mean, that's the crap they feed us. They give us crappy music. They give us crappy TV. They give us crappy multimedia. And all it does is tell you everything is okay and it's party time and don't worry. When reality, you should probably worry. We got too many people that care too much about, you know, the stupid things like gay rights. I mean, they're not stupid in of themselves, but arguments that are kind of stupid. They're people. They have rights.
Yeah.
Trans rights. They're people. They have rights. I mean...
Yeah, and it's just ridiculous. And let me circle back a little bit. I don't... And when I say to get rid of Obamacare, I just mean it's... What it's done has been great in terms of getting people affordable health care, but it's also... It's affected me. It's also affected my job, too, in the sense where working in healthcare IT, we've seen, you know, insurance payouts go way down when that was finally implemented. So what that means is we have to basically double the volume of work to be able to, you know, even maintain the company profits.
Right.
So not only does that really suck, but it's also caused employee insurance, like, premiums, like, way up. It's like, when I first started at my job before, this was back at 2011, before Obamacare even really fully went into effect, for my family of four, it cost about less than $400 a month for all of us to be under, you know, decent insurance. Now it's up to $650 a month.
Well, I mean, in fairness, it's your fault for having a family.
I know, right? Shit. Fuck myself, you know?
Well, if you had, then you wouldn't have to worry about this.
I know. Jeez. But, I mean, it's just things like that, that every year the premiums are going up and my co-pays are getting higher. And it's just like, and while it's great that everybody else is able to get more health care, but it's also like, well, when is enough going to be enough? And when is it? And also that it's mandatory to have healthcare now. It's like, really? Why? Or I mean, not that it's bad to have healthcare. It's just if you don't have it, you're being penalized.
Right. You're penalizing someone that already, I mean, we'll say a good majority of people that don't have healthcare now either don't have a job or they just can't afford it.
Yeah.
So what are we doing for those people that can't afford it? Guess what? We're charging you for it. We're charging you for it and then not giving it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was lucky enough, I don't know how this happened, but this last tax season, I was somehow exempt from, I don't have healthcare right or health insurance right now, and I was exempt from it. I don't know how, I'm not going to ask questions why.
Did you at least have it for a month or anything?
No, I didn't have it at all.
Did you at least have it for a day?
No.
Not even a day? Because no. I know if you have it for at least a month, you can be exempt.
Yeah, I had it for nothing. I think and you know, what might have happened is where I worked, they have you as probationary, and you have to sign under my works insurance for your probationary period.
Ah.
So that's the only thing I can think of. But I mean, her income tax check was like dismal because they now charge you $70-something a month, which is the price of their lowest insurance package for not having it.
It's probably like absolute shit too.
Yeah. I mean, you have a $6,000 deductible. What?
Oh, only? That's it? Yeah. Oh God. Don't even get me started on deductibles too. It's like my company's deductible goes up every year. And it's just like, oh, but if you want the better deductible, you know, you have to, you know, your premium is going to be way more. Just like, oh, great.
Yeah. And you ever talked to like a sketchy insurance salesman? Because that's really what they all are. They'll pull the, well, if you want the better deductible, you should love your family enough to spend the extra like $15. And it's like, whoa. First off, I'm a family of one. The fact that you're implying that I am two people is A, correct, and B, offensive, but...
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah. We can go in circles about that, but I just wanted to bring that up also because we're both in healthcare, and it's just... God. It's ridiculous.
But also where we are, well, I mean, like, Hernando County and Pasco County has, for Florida at least... So many weird programs. I mean, my mother went to the hospital. She just lost her health insurance. They just said, oh, by the way, no. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I see your point. No, it was a pretty strong answer to why. But they just, I mean, one day we're like, hey, listen, your health insurance is cut off. No more. And then, like, the next day she had, like, she went to, like, partial renal failure.
Oh, shit.
So she went to the hospital that I work at, and I didn't realize they did this. She basically stayed for free for like 3 days. They were like, you get this program, this program, this program, this program, this program, and you're one of like 3% of people that qualify for this. She got it all faux frizzle. Like,
wow.
And they're like, it happens to like 15 people a month that you just get your free whatever.
That's not bad, but...
And it's like, it's not bad, but also, I mean, I'm happy because she didn't have to pay for it. But at the same time, it's kind of like, where did that money come from?
Well, someone's paying for it.
Yeah, it's like, why did she... I mean, once again, not complaining, but it's like, why can't everybody just get that, you know?
Yeah. No, what happened to me recently was my kids were on the state insurance, Healthy Kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only paying $20 a month for both of them. All of a sudden, they decided to up my premium to $600 a month. So that was quite a jump from $20 to $600. And they claimed that the reason why they made it go higher was because they claimed that according to what I make at my job, that I make about $8,000 a month. And first, I want to know where the hell they got that figure in. Two, why am I not making $8,000 a month right now? I mean, is my work telling me something that I don't know? Because, I mean, I'd love to be making that right now. It was just like, it just boggles my mind that it's almost like the incompetency of it, too. Because, like, I'm still battling this right now that I've sent them emails, called them, like, shown them pay stubs, like, I do not make this much money. Please go back to where it was. I have not, you know, suddenly gotten a raise or anything like that. I'm still making the same amount of money I did last year. You know, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's frustrating as fuck, man. And that is adulting for you.
Oh, yeah.
Best way to adult. And I'm looking at my desk right now, and I feel like such an adult. I have magic cards strewn all about my desk because I'm kind of fiddling around with my God deck again. Okay. Just doing a little bit updates here and there. I mean, nothing big at all. Just what the fuck did I add to? Oh shit, where's my deck? Oh God, did I get? Uh-oh, Emery, I think I fucked up. Because I have, like, some piles of cards, and I think I may have accidentally...
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Because I unsleeved it all because I was, you know, wanting to make changes. Oh, shit. I fucked up. So, my night is going to be trying to find my deck. Oh, God. I'm really awesome at Magic, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Oh, yeah. I've seen you firsthand lose to me.
Yeah, that fucking burn deck. And I think I was playing the Insult Artifact deck, too, at the time.
And you know what's funny is you were the only person that I was afraid of that night.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, I keep hearing... I think it's the way Skid says your voice. He's always like, Matthew Zabritsky! And it's like, oh, man, why do you say it like that? He must know something that no one else knows.
Oh.
And then we played, and I was like, he's going to destroy me. And then you're like, okay, you win. And I was like, what? No. What? I do what?
Yeah, no, it was just like, I don't remember the exact games, but it was just like, well, shit. Yeah, okay.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
But I miss some of the standard players, though.
Yeah, it's...
The crying. Man. The crying is what I missed.
Yeah, there was that one kid who played nothing but mono green and standard.
It's funny, I was thinking, when I was saying crying, and I missed the crying, it's exactly who I was talking about.
Yeah, and And I did something bad one night where I can't remember what deck I was playing. I may have gone to the dark side and played Abzan during that. And I was in a really good mood, and I was in one of those, I don't really give a shit how well I do. And I could tell he was having such a bad night that I purposely did bad to let him win. And he, cause every card I would play, cause I beat him like really fast game one, and it looked like he was just on the verge of tears. And so like games two and three, I purposely did really bad and just like, oh, I'm not drawing anything. And just to give him the win, cause I felt bad, cause he was just you could just look in his face, like he was just really sad or something. And just like and people were telling me like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. You know, that's just going to enable him. And I can see that argument, but I'm just like, you know, I don't care. It's FNM. It doesn't mean anything, you know. He was happy that he won, and you know, at least I felt like I did something good to him.
How people, I guess how I feel people think about me when it comes to like EDH is exactly how I treat people when it came to Standard. So, like, I played him, and he was at like 3 health for the longest time, and I was playing red deck wins. And yeah. They're like, oh man, you got this. And he's all happy and excited, and he goes to kill me, and I'm like, exquisite blood.
Oh, he's God.
Like, what? And I was like, yeah, you dead, son. You dead. He's like, oh. He's like, what? And I was like, dude, I've had this in my hand for the last like 4 turns.
That's evil. That's evil.
Why'd you wait? And I was like, because I wanted to see you smile.
Oh, you are evil. Oh, man. No, there was another time I got him really mad one time. I was playing a homebrew teamer deck when I thought teamer was going to be good in the beginning of cons.
When you thought wrong?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people did, because Savage Knuckleblade was fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, especially in draft, that card was bonkers. But so I built a deck around Savage Knuckleblade and shit, not Sarkon. Crap, what's the 6 drop that where creatures can't be countered? I'm drawing a blank.
Sarok.
Sarok, that's right. Sarok, not Sarkon. And he was playing mono green, of course, and he got up to like 30 life, and he got me down to like 5 or something. I had Sarok out on the field, and he had a monstrous Arbor Colossus or something.
Yeah, okay.
And so I had a whole bunch of mana out, so I only had my Sarok out, and he only had the Arbor Colossus, and he kept that untapped, but he had a tap creature, like a flying creature or something, or I don't know, whatever it was. And so I played Act of Treason to take his Arbor Colossus. And then I Twin Flamed both, not both my creatures, but Twin Flamed the Arbor Colossus to, you know, make a copy of it. And it just turned out to be just enough damage to kill him. And he just looked at me just like, are you fucking kidding me?
That look, that looks the best look. Because it goes from kind of a derpy look to a,
yeah,
some weird noise. Some half beast noise.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was so fun beating him. But, yeah, you know.
It was. But, like I said, I also felt bad some nights because it was just.
Because you're wrong. Never feel bad about something like that, man. Come on. It's Standard.
I know, but it's like. Well, one, it's FNM. If it was a PPTQ or IQ, I'd be like, I don't give a fuck how you're feeling. You know? Your feelings are nothing to me, but. You know, but there's, yeah, we've had a few interesting people at our shop. We had that husband and wife couple that would bring their baby for all hours of the day.
Oh, I promised I would tell the story if you brought it up.
We're not going to name names.
We're not going to name names. However,
but you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Do you know who got them to leave the shop?
Was it you?
No.
Jen?
It was Jen.
Ooh, do tell, because I don't know the official story. Skid wouldn't tell me.
Of course Skid wouldn't tell you, because it gives us, or takes away all of our glory. Okay.
I need the juicy gossip, man. I'm like a valley girl. I need the gossip.
So there was one point where he and Jen, and for the viewers listening, or the listeners listening, Jen is my girlfriend. They were playing a game of Commander together. Words were said, and he crossed the line, basically, and was, you know, calling her a piece of shit and a bitch and stuff like that, which...
Are you fucking kidding me? No, were you there?
I wasn't there. I was actually...
Oh, man.
I was on my way back from class. I mean, I was doing 60 on Spring Hill Drive trying to get there before he left.
I would have flipped my shit, bro, if I was there.
So, Jen was like, you know, he should leave the shop. He should be kicked out of the shop. Well, it was... we had our EDH week going on, and I had just rotated out as a captain, so I became just a judge, you know, just
yeah,
help people out. And I hear people complaining, and it's I don't think you ever met them, but it was my friends that I used to play EDH with. A couple of them were there, and they were playing with them, and we had just incorporated the Cheats McGee rule. Because of this person.
What's the Cheats McGee rule?
If you are caught cheating in any way, accidentally, non-accidentally, the game stops and you have kind of like an open forum in the game where it's like, okay, who, you know, this is what happened. This is what I caught you doing. You know, what's your excuse? Did you do it intentionally? You know, and it's you know, it was civil. It was, I didn't mean to. I accidentally did it. You know, I'll make sure I won't do it again kind of thing. Well, he just sits there and denies it the whole time, and he's like, I'm not going to say, I'm not going to... Oh, I get to sound like him now. One sec.
Oh, jeez. No.
I'm not going to say, I'm not going to do it, but, you know, I just... it just doesn't make sense, because it doesn't make sense. He's making excuses for himself. I didn't see it, so I was like, you know what? You know, why don't you guys just call off the vote to see, and if, you know, you had a vote to see if they got kicked out of the game or not. So I told them, you know, it was up to them, but I didn't see a reason. I mean, this is the same guy that 2 or 3 days earlier said all this mean crap about my girlfriend. But in the interest of fairness, I had to, you know, as much as I wanted to kick him out, I didn't see it, whatever. So it was turn, we'll say it's turn 6. And he had 8 lands out with no land fetch. You know, no explosive vegetation, no sky shot claim, nothing. So they'd asked, you know, where'd the extra lands come from? So he goes, oh, you know, I messed up. I didn't mean, you know, it's turn, whatever. I had 2 extra lands. I'm sorry. I must have forgot. Puts them back in his hand. I leave the table and turn around to kind of, you know, I leave to make, okay, I'm looking at somebody else. And I turn around to watch their game. I look at his lands. Got 9 lands out now. So I woke up and I'm like, okay, now where'd these 3 extra lands come from? And he's like, oh yeah, that's right. He goes, I, you know, with all the stuff going on, I messed up and I must have, because he did have the 3 lands in his hand.
Yeah.
Or the 2 lands, and he must have just, you know, put them down, not realizing it happens. You know, you get flustered, you know, you're not really sure what's going on. I get it. So I'm like, all right. So I turn around, and then I hear one of the guys go, he just did it again, and he has 10 lands on the thing. I know, he has 10 lands out. He has 10 lands and the same amount of cards in his hand that he had the last 4 times I went back to check on him. So I'm like, dude, you're cheating. And now his wife was the mousiest person in the world, wouldn't say anything, and there was something kind of with her, but... That's neither here nor there. He's like, I would never do that. I would never put extra lands down. And his wife, the real MVP of this story, goes, but honey, you say you do that all the time because no one notices and it gives you a head up in the game.
Oh, shit!
He's like, shut up! Shut up! So, needless to say, everyone, I was like, all right, guys, call a vote. And they all voted to have him kicked out of the game. And then eventually, I mean, because, I mean, all that crap was going on with, like, cops showing up because they left their baby outside, you know, in the cold.
Dude, what?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. I knew they... Oh, God. I can tell you some stuff with when I only played with him and his wife once, but I'll tell you that after you're done here.
We're in a shop, and this female police officer comes in, and she's like, all right. She goes, first off, I thought this was a prank phone call, because I didn't think someone was stupid enough to leave their baby outside of a shop unattended at 11 o'clock at night when it's 40 degrees out.
Oh, my God.
Whose baby is this? Oh, man. They carted him out and everything. They're like, you're out of here. But apparently it was like the fourth time it happened.
Dude, oh my God.
So, I mean, and everyone, I mean, they were trying to cheat this. Just overall, for everyone listening out there, if you do this, you're a bad person. They wanted to adopt more kids so they could make more money off the government.
Oh my God. And
they weren't quiet about it. They weren't like, oh, we just really love kids. It was, we just want more money. And it's like, oh my God. You're saying this out in the open. People hear you.
Dude, that frustrates the fuck out of me.
Yeah,
And
then playing games with him was just, he cheated constantly. Did you know his wife had to call him sir?
Yes, I saw, dude, I felt so bad for her.
Yep.
Because I don't know if she was, like, emotionally abused or physically abused, but there was something going on where you could just definitely tell. The one time I played with them, I brought my Aloro deck, and it was either before standard or maybe I came in on a Saturday or Sunday or something, and I didn't want to play with them, but they were the only ones there.
I've had a lot of things like that.
Yeah, and at one point, his wife accidentally knocked my deck down, and it wasn't out of, you know, malice or anything like that. It was an accident. And she had this, like, she freaked out, man.
Oh, yeah.
She looked at her husband like he was gonna beat her or something, like, and she was just like, I'm so sorry. And she looked at him like, can I help him pick up the cards? And I'm like, it's okay. It's really okay.
Yeah.
It's fine. They're just cards, you know, whatever. And oh my God, man, I felt so bad. Like, I was just, like all the times that my wife and I have gotten to a fight or anything, and if I ever felt like I treated her bad, it's then when I see what's happening here, I'm just like, dude, there's something, like, seriously going on that she would, yeah, like you say, constantly call him sir, constantly, like, ask for his approval for everything, and then be afraid to talk up or say, like, hey, can't we go home instead of spending 12 hours at a card shop while the baby is crying and not wanting to be here?
No. After this game, it's like, God. Yeah.
Dude, and he completely cheated in my game, too, because I had,
on top of being a crappy parent and a crappy husband, he cheated in Magic.
Yeah, he cheated with me, and I forgot the frickin' commander, but I was playing Aloro, and I had all my enchantments out where, you know, like, Ghostly Prison, Sphere of Safety, Archangel of Ties, you know, basically to where you have to pay, like, 10 mana just to attack me for one creature. Mm-hmm. And what card was it? He put down two lands. One of them was Reliquary Tower, and the other was, like, a basic land or something. And I caught him, like, no, you can't put that Reliquary Tower down. I just saw you put a land down this turn. He's like, oh, well, you know, why are you going so hard on me, man? You know, I'm just trying to play here.
Yeah, I'm just trying to live my life, man. Just trying to play the game. Just trying to have fun.
Yeah, just trying to have fun. I'm like, no, please put the Reliquary Tower back. He's like, well, no, can I keep that out and, you know, put the swamp back? I'm like, no. He's like, well, I'm just trying to have fun here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh my God, are you serious? I'm like, fine, keep the Reliquary Tower. And then he kills everybody else, and it's just me and him. And like I said, I got up to a point where, you know, he had a shit ton of creatures out, but he had to pay 10 mana for each creature, and he did some wacky ass math with his mana to where he was able to pay 10 mana for each creature to kill me, and I'm just like, you know what, whatever. I'm done with this game.
You got it.
You win. If it makes you feel good about yourself for cheating, I don't care.
See, this is... I'm on tapped out talking to people and whatnot as, you know, as doing this, because multitasking is a thing.
Yes.
You had what I'm going to call the original idea for Five Color God stuff. Between you and Skid, I mean, you guys had it. There's a deck on here called Five Color God Stuff that I thought was yours. It has 70,000 views and 205 comments, and its score is 217, which is high on all accounts.
Holy shit.
The deck dies to a merciless eviction. Like, I'm sorry, that was just me interjecting. I see this. No, because like when you go on a Tapped Out, it shows you like the top decks at that moment, and it's always on here. And I have tried to like really help this dude out and be cool with him about it. And everything is just he's one of those guys that's if you like he takes I guess not it was not even necessarily criticism. He takes anyone really trying to like help him. I mean, like, hey, this would be really cool in this deck. I guess he gets mad that he didn't think about it. And I'm thinking that's why it has such a high score and so many views, is because anyone who suggests something, he comes back with, like, these really rude, mean comments to him. And it's just... Good God. I don't even know where I'm going with this, but it's mean.
Oh, I found the deck you're talking about. Yeah, this is totally me. I'm this guy, and I've just been doing this the whole time. No, but hold on, let me look at this deck real quick. It's probably a way better deck than mine.
It's more focused. Yours is very flavorful when it comes to, you know, this is pretty much, I'm going to play every god with all of, like, the Lorwyn avatars. Like, Overbeing of Myth and, you know, Nibbles.
Yeah, I have those, too, because I call those the demigods. But, he's actually playing, like, good cards, and I don't do that.
Yeah.
I play flavorful cards in my god deck, and the only time it's won is when Skid played it. what did he do? I forgot what he did, but he ended up mirror weaving a creature and, like, killed me in one turn with it.
Mirror weave. I love that in Sig. I played a Sig deck that was like, oh, you cast a Runescar Demon, and I've got, like, 15 Merfolk on the field. Everyone's got a Runescar Demon now, except I've got 15 of them.
And you're all dead.
Good game. What's really fun is when you do it with, like, a Lord of Atlantis, because then you've got, like, 15 17 17s.
That's not bad.
Or 15... 15 15s, I think. It's just like, ooh. That was actually one of my... If I didn't kill you with Sig, because it was Voltron, because he's unblockable, technically, you just sit there and, haha. You're taking a bunch of Merfolk to the face.
Yeah, that's funny.
God,
yeah. Going back to that couple real quick, at one point during that game, the only game I ever played with him... he tried to hand me his baby, like, oh, hey, can you watch her for a little bit? I'm like, no.
Oh, it's so, such awkwardness.
I straight up told him, like, you also need to change your baby's diaper. Like, it's bad right now. It's obviously, it looks like she peed and pooped in it, and you can smell it. And he's just like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. And then, were you there that one time? I think Jen and I were playing EDH or something, and then he was going on something, and she basically told him to, like, you really need to take your baby home, all right?
Yep.
And she was just saying, and he says something like, oh, you know, you need to mind your own business. He's like, no, you need to stop bringing your baby here and take her home.
That was, like...
I can't remember if you were there or not, but it was just like, oh,
Jen had to tell them that enough that I was there for at least three of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one part where he's like, he said something along the lines of, like, you know, she attacks me because I'm, like, the best player at this table, right? And she's like, no, I hate you. Because you're a bad person. And that's why I love her.
No, no, wait. There was another time.
Actually, she's listening to me do this, and she's, like, cracking up right now, reliving these memories.
No, there was another time that I played with him. I remember it was with you, and I can't remember who the fourth person was, but we all sort of agreed, like, all right, let's kill him as quickly as we can.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll play EDH.
It might have been Corey. Corey was the, like, the main person to start the, listen, we all hit him,
yeah.
Let's end them. But like, and that's you know, once again, that's also commander mentality, though. That's why it's, you have to always balance like who you're cool with when you're playing commander, because if not, you just have the worst commander experience ever.
Yeah.
I'm just here to have fun. No, not happening, man.
Yeah,
it's cute that you're trying, but nope.
No, it, yeah, exactly. And there was, and now, I don't know if you've been to the shop lately, I've noticed that there's another type of people that are constantly bringing their kid there and just staying there for hours at a time. That they look to be a younger couple, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I played with him, kind of a hothead, doesn't like losing to anything.
Yeah. He's not very good either.
This is my hats off. And I really hate being like this, but if someone's the way that he is, it's just, I have to be. He got crappy with me because I beat him. And he was talking about how oppressive my deck is and how no one... And I think I've told the story earlier, but I have to tell it again because you know who this person is now.
Yeah.
He was going on about how oppressive it was and how it just, there was no way to beat it and it was stupid, and this is why he hated blue players, and he never, ever, ever wanted to see Ramirez de Pietro again.
Oh my god. That's hilarious. But, yeah, I really hope this doesn't turn into another one of those that they keep the kid there all day, because it's like, seriously, I see the look on, I don't know if it's his wife or girlfriend or something, and I just see her face, and she's one pissed off all the time, because it's like, she's like, let's go. He's like, no, just one more game. It's like, bro, come on.
Yeah.
You have a kid. When I had my kid, it's like, I pretty much stayed home and never went out at all, ever. It's like, and we were so lucky to ever get a babysitter. And when we did, my wife and I would just be like, run for the hills.
Never look back.
Yeah. We're not coming back until it's time for the babysitter to leave.
And even then, we're not going to be happy about it.
Yeah. But oh, it's if there's any listeners and you're a parent, don't bring your kid to the card shop and stay there for hours and play Magic if they're, you know, not able to play Magic at all. It's really selfish of you when you do it, and it's also really shitty of you as a parent to do that. You know? It's like, card shops are not daycares, and I hate when I see people treat them like it.
Yeah, well, yeah, another thing too, though, is what happens is those same people that bring their babies to the card shops are the same people that drop their kids off to, like, GameStop while they go shopping at Walmart or something.
Oh, wait, so you shouldn't do that?
I mean, it's different. You raise respectable kids, yes, but come on, yeah. Who actually does that anymore? Who has time to actually train, you know, respectable kids? But it's like, we have those, like, you know, the four or five little hellion kids that go to our shop. Mom and dad drop them off at, you know, the shop at 12:30, and don't pick them up until, you know, 1 o'clock at night, and they're sitting there with, you know, 15 cherry sodas in their system, bouncing off the walls, going, you know, sex nuts and retard strong. And it's just, there is nothing stronger yet more annoying than a 12-year-old kid with like 10 Mountain Dews in them.
Yeah, and I kind of know who you're talking about.
I can't be too mad at him because he's like my little brother, but.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that because it's...
Because he's a listener and he knows I'm talking about him.
Oh, I don't even know if he listens to this, but I don't, I'm up to like 3 listeners now, so it's pretty awesome.
What way?
Yeah, it's awesome. But oh man. Yeah, it's magic is magic. I think that's what we're gonna learn here tonight.
Yep.
That magic is magical. Especially with EDH, I love how you describe it as a sandbox. I've never thought about it like that. Because when you think of sandbox, you think of, you know, games like Grand Theft Auto or your open world games where it's like you can do whatever you want in the world. And
right.
EDH is exactly that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can, you know, it's if there is something you want to do in the game, you can do it. You know, and that was always my big thing. Like, you know, when we started playing, there was no commander. There was no EDH. There was you wanted a deck that would do something. But, I mean, you could have basically, I mean, Kitchen Table Magic was really popular, you know, around that time because it was, I'm just going to put these really cool cards that I like together. They're going to do something silly. And if it works, awesome. If not, then, who cares?
Can you remember your very first Magic deck?
Yes.
What was it?
My very first Magic deck was I'm going to say probably 600 card amalgam of every Magic card I had together.
Why don't you play that now in Legacy? You'd probably win tournaments hand over fist.
You know what's sad is it probably has $8,000 worth of cards in it.
Because wow.
We've got to remember, I never played green. I was always a blue player.
Yeah.
So my first real deck, in all honesty, was just this weird kind of blue combo deck. It revolved around Mind Over Matter, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, this is before Temple Bell was even printed, so it was like Mind Over Matter and Twiddle and things like that, where you were just constantly tapping and untapping an artifact, and you just, you know, brain geysered someone for 75 kind of thing. Kind of like a really convoluted, very slow high tide deck. But what? Sorry, I lost my train of thought again. I'm terrible at this.
No, it's all right.
Oh, so yeah, I was saying I could have, you know, I started playing Urza's Block. I never played blue, or I never played green. I always played blue. So there was one card that I now, every time I see it, get angry. But I used to just throw it away. Because I'd get, you know, I probably had 15, 20 of these stupid things. Because this is when I really got into it. So, I mean, every Christmas, every one of my family bought me booster packs. You know, I got a box for Christmas. I got a box for my birthday. You know, I was just, everyone in the family, all my friends, just knew to get me a booster box. Or pack, or whatever. So, I would always just throw away these really crappy green lands. And,
Am I thinking what you think you're going to say?
Yep, because I didn't play green. And all my friends played green. And it was stupid, because who played creatures? I didn't play creatures. Creatures were dumb. But, you know,
don't tell me you threw away Gaia's Cradle.
I probably handed out more Gaia's Cradle than, like, a drug dealer hands out ecstasy at a freaking Daft Punk concert. I had stacks of these stupid things that I would just throw away because I didn't play green.
Oh, man.
So you can imagine my surprise when 2 years ago I went to go build a deck and someone's like, you should put Guy's Cradle in there. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that land. Was it like $1?
Yeah, not so much.
And I'm like, oh man, it's like a $200 land. I'm just gonna go ahead and cry. But that was but I mean, I had a lot of moments like that. I mean, so you win some, you lose some, kind of thing. Like when I first saw Snapcaster Mage printed, it was like, I'm gonna buy every Snapcaster Mage I can find. People were complaining because they were like $20 a piece, and I was like, no, you don't understand. I mean, I had 2 playsets of foil Snapcaster Mages. and I sold them like last year, the year before. It was like payday. Because foil Snapcasters were like 120. And I bought them for 40. So, I mean, made triple on all of them, which was nice.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, then there's some that you look at them and you're like, I'm going to buy every single one of these because they're going to be worth $1 billion one day. My biggest blunder was Exotic Orchard. When they changed Rule 7 of EDH, where it said that you can now produce color outside of your commander's color, I figured for sure Forgotten or Exotic Orchard was going to shoot up in price. Kind of like Seedborn Muse did when Prophet of Crucifix was banned. I was like, this is going to shoot up, I know it. And it, that day, like, it was like a dollar card. Looked it up, dollar. Went to go show it to Skid. It had already raised up to like $3. Went to go buy it. It raised up to like $6. And I'm like, yes! This is like incredible. So I bought like 10 of them. I bought every one the shop had. Ask me how they're $2 right now, probably.
Oh, no. I think you're
Emery
right.
Emery made a boom boom.
We all do, man. It's it's gonna happen.
Yeah. So I mean, I was out $60. Thank God it wasn't like hundreds of dollars on. I wouldn't be here before you. I would be. You can get them foil for $8.
Oh man!
But they're about $4, so I made $1 on them.
You, I think you would do really well in Magic Finance.
I feel like I would do terrible. I feel like that was a cruel, cruel joke to make yourself feel better.
Oh, dude, that's like when a couple months ago got into, you know, the stock market and all that, doing some investing, and yeah, that's almost even worse because you'll buy a stock. And as soon as you buy a stock, it's going to suddenly plummet down insanely. And you're just like, well, shit, let me cut my losses. And 2 weeks later, it's way back up. And if you would have just kept it, you know, you could have made, you know, $1,000 in profit. Like, motherfucker.
You know, what's funny is I had one card that was actually profit. I was building. And I love this story because it's the only good story to come out of my old job. I'm sorry, it's one of only two. I was working at Goodwill. I checked donations and stuff like that.
Oh, man, you lucky.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you how fun that was. And I was building an Experiment Kraj deck.
Oh, I love him.
And one of the... I mean, Experiment Kraj combos with about... Yes, different cards. I mean... It's harder to build him non-combo than it is to build him combo. I mean, I found this out the hard way. But one of the cards I really wanted for it was Bloomtender. Bloomtender is the elf. It's a 2-drop. You tap it for... you tap it for mana, and it adds, like, if you have a symbol from every color, it'll give you 5 mana.
Oh, shit.
So, in Kraj, she taps for 2, which means you can put a +1/+1 counter on, and Kraj will tap for 2... And there's another creature that says pay 2 mana, untap it to exile the top card of someone's library. So you just go, and you just machine gun people's cards away and mill them to death, technically. So that's that.
Anyone feel like going to Walmart?
Ooh, Walmart.
Yeah, right? So.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So you found that in a donation or something?
I was just cleaning out the little donation bins, and I look down, and I see a magic card face down. And I'm like, wouldn't it be something if this was the card? You know, just joke around at myself. I flip it over, it's a mint condition Bloomtender. I was like, this is the best day of my life.
It's like, no way.
At the time, Bloomtenders were like $30 a piece. And I was like, yes!
Damn.
Faux Freezy, and that thing has been in so many of my decks. It's I play a super loop or what I call the Super Loop deck. It's like a Circle of Life deck with Horde of Notions, where it keeps constantly recurring Maelstrom Wanderer. So I keep cascading over and over and over and over and over again.
God.
But it uses Intruder Alarm, which whenever a creature comes into play, you untap all creatures, Bloom Tender, and Horde of Notions with Maelstrom Wanderer, and then a Sack Outlet. I mean, it's kind of convoluted to get started, but just getting one or two of those pieces on the field is guarantees you a victory, essentially. So, with my general out, Bloom Tender taps for 5 mana. Well, my general's ability costs 5 mana. So, what you do is you get Maelstrom Wanderer in the graveyard, or cast him, whatever. Get his 2 cascade triggers, sacrifice him to something, tap Bloom Tender to get the 5 mana, put him back into play, whatchamacallit, Intruder Alarm triggers untapping Bloom Tender, and you just keep doing over and over and over. So you cascade on top of cascade on top of cascade on top of cascade. And he gets everything haste, and then you've got like Rampage or Pathbreaker Ibex and Craterhoof Behemoth in there, and just blow people out of the water.
And just win.
I mean, you can't cascade into Craterhoof Behemoth, but you can also generate so much mana by doing this that there's really... I mean, you just... I'm going to sacrifice Maelstrom Wanderer to Phyrexian Altar 17 times, play my entire deck, and Craterhoof. And it's...
Oh my gosh.
It's satisfying. One of the generals I've always wanted to play was Maelstrom Wanderer. The only problem with him is he's just kind of good stuff. That's...
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of play him... I mean, I played him... Unfortunately, I had him built, and I playtested him against Jen, and the first thing that came out was him, Scourge of the Thrones, which is a dragon that gets an extra attack phase if you attack the person with the highest life total, or tied for the highest life total.
Yeah.
And then a Tarka. So, I swung for like 40-something the first turn, and then my second combat phase, she was already dead, but I swung for like 44. This is turn 5. I was like, well,
I shouldn't
build this deck. But I've always wanted to see someone play him like responsibly. He's kind of like the alcohol of Magic, you know? People don't play Maelstrom Wanderer responsibly, and it just leads to just degenerate shenanigans. But it's pretty cool. It's fun. So that's a challenge to anybody listening, is to build a Maelstrom Wanderer deck that does not go ham with one casting of Maelstrom Wanderer.
Yeah, it's like I said, this just blows my mind with just how much craziness there is. All right, unfortunately, man, I need to wrap this up, and it's been awesome talking with you. I mean, we've talked, for about 4 hours. Pretty much, almost. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely going to have to edit the podcast for some parts for when we were having technical difficulties, but it was a lot of fun. I definitely want to do this again. Do you have any shout-outs you want to do or anything? Or plug anything?
Sure. We'll do a shout-out to Colossal Comics in Spring Hill, Florida. We'll do a shout-out to TappedOut.net. Shout-out to MTG Salvation. Shout-out to Armada Games in Tampa, Florida. Shout-out to mtgcommander.com. And of course, shout out to you, Mr. Zuby. Shout out to you.
Oh, well, thank you. I feel very special. Well, all I've got to say is thanks again, and have a great night, man.
You too, bud.
All right.